Okay, that's fine. Okay. We're way down.
At the suggestion of one of the committee members who's not here, it was thought we would spend more time today listening to bills as opposed to a Saturday. So I trust that committee member will arrive shortly.
I have a 4 o'clock here appointment.
So we're going to skip around. We're not going to necessarily go in order. It depends on some of the bills. You know, when members are here. I indicated to Senator Kubley we could take his bill, which we think is a fairly quick one, first so he can get home. So, Senator Kubley, we've got Senate File 2541. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2541 is a bill that just looks at giving tribal governments the opportunity to have different off-highway vehicles and that kind of thing that other local units of government already have. That's the primary impetus of it. Although there are a couple of amendments, Mr. Chair. One of them is from Senator Anderson's committee, and maybe we'd like to deal with that one first.
Oh, that's the division report, right? Division report?
Senator Higgins.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, isn't that the division report that
it is
adopted?
We did it, yeah.
We already did that.
You already did that? Oh.
We already did that.
All right. Well, that's good.
I'd say that.
That's just great.
There's another amendment, Mr. Chair, that Mr. Knopf is making some copies of. You have the amendment.
The A2?
Is this the A2 amendment?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chair. It's the Coast Guard had talked about the problem that they have with the licensing of watercraft. And so the amendment simply deals with that issue, and it's something that the Coast Guard is okay with, so it's not a problem there.
I didn't realize we had a Coast Guard here.
Well, it's there are places in the state that have port authorities, Mr. Chair. And
okay. All right, we've got the A2 amendment in front of us.
I'll move it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins moves adoption of the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Kubley.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess the only other piece that you already adopted from the division, talked about, registering vehicles by tribal governments to a tribal member that was requested by the Leech Lake Tribe. I had brought the bill forward primarily for the Dakota people on the Upper and Lower Sioux reservations. But that's about all there is to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion on the bill?
I'll move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 2541, as amended, be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I'm looking for I was hoping to get get a couple of the small bills out of the way of non-committee members. I don't
No, she's here for my bill.
So you said Kathy's.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Senator Anderson, I've just been told that apparently we have some bills of non-committee members, smaller bills. I was told that everybody thought we'd have your bill first and we'd be spending, the next 3, 4, 5 hours.
Oh, no.
And,
so... Mr. Chair, it could go a lot faster if everybody just votes yes and gets it done.
So moved.
Why don't we try and take up your bill again? see what happens.
All right. Works for me.
Senator Betzel, I was kidding, really. Seriously.
No, it's going to take 3-4 hours.
It is.
We're kidding.
Senator Anderson has assured me the bill is in very good shape now and that she has a couple of amendments and it's going to go real quickly.
So, Mr. Chair, how many of those amendments sitting for Ms. Watson go to this bill?
They're all for Senator Thomasoni's bill.
Oh, it's Senator
Saltzman. Oh, here's Senator, I'm sorry, Senator. Here's Senator Saltzman. So.
No, you go first.
Timing is everything.
All right.
Just to get the Woodbury.
Senator Saltzman, we have a couple of bills. Senate file 2832, is that? Or
I think 3003 is first. We have the solid waste disposal facilities and landfill siting bill.
Okay.
That's you. You move it.
All right. Senator Anderson moves the adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
And I believe there's also a technical amendment to 3003 as well, Mr. Chair.
You satisfied, Senator Betzold?
Betzold, you're all right.
I'm okay, hold on.
Okay, I think it's been distributed. Senator Metzen moves adoption of the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
Yes. On this bill, Mr. Chair, this is a bill that deals with landfill siting rulemaking. And I believe in the 2008 finance bill, there was language added, and Senator Anderson was very helpful with that, regarding that there needed to be rulemaking done in how we site our landfills. And there was a moratorium put in place until the rulemaking is then completed. There's been extensive work done in this area, and in the report that came back, the department seemed to go beyond the intent in that the landfill siting would not only be for future landfills, but also for past landfills, current landfills, and there was concern about that. And so this language clarifies that, and you will see the new language on page 2 at lines 2.25, that this act shall not apply to solid waste facilities that were done before January 1st, 2011, that solid waste disposals that only accept construction and demolition debris are then exempt. So we began to clarify that. There was a small fiscal note on this related to having stakeholder groups involved. And the MPCA has said that they can absorb that expense. And Mr. Hugenin is here from Friends of Washington County. They have been very involved in all of the meetings that have gone on this past fall to try to work with all the stakeholder groups, because there have been some concerns of how this will impact landfills throughout Minnesota. At the same time, we want to make sure that we don't have situations like we've had in Washington County where our water has been contaminated because these landfills have been sited and then contaminated our groundwater. So, Mr. Chair, that's sort of a brief overview of the bill.
We have questions.
I'll move the bill.
All right. Senator Higgins moves that Senate file 3003 as amended be recommended to pass. Further discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Very good. So, Mr. Thomasoni, or should I do my other bills, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Very good. Would you like to start with the construction codes bill? And I believe that the Department of Labor and Industry is here.
Senator Thomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Senate File Number 2832, and this bill is a result of the home warranty bills that were passed in the Senate last year, and we did pass an attorney's fee bill that was vetoed by the governor. But as part of that, we did request that a task force be convened to look at how can we deal with home warranties issues in a more proactive way before they get to litigation. And so there was extensive work over the interim on this, and the idea of how we could have contractors and homeowners work together to be able to resolve these issues. And Mr. Durenberger is here from the Department of Labor and Industry, and he had a very key role in this. There are some costs associated with this, and I'd like him to address those because there are some fees involved. But we do believe that this is a very proactive way of trying to settle these claims against contractors before they get to litigation, which we know is very, very costly. And in the end, I'm not sure that homeowners are served as well as they should. But this is a proactive way to be able to deal with those home warranty issues.
Okay. Mr. Durenberger, did you wish to?
Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Charlie Durenberger. I'm with the Department of Labor and Industry. The two fees that we're proposing here relate to the early neutral evaluation process that we're setting up in this bill. All we're really trying to do with the fees is recover the actual cost to the department of analyzing and evaluating individuals who apply to us to be certified as a neutral to hear these cases, as well as a $25 fee to each party for submitting a case for early neutral evaluation.
And so, Senator Saltzman, I just asked Mr. Mossman, everything's from the building code fund then?
Mr. Chairman, the fees would be collected directly from the people that were applying to be a neutral and then would go into the construction code fund.
Yes. Very good.
This had been through where? Senator Metzen's committee initially or Senator Scheid?
This went to Senator Scheid's committee, Mr. Chair, and then to, I believe, Judiciary.
Okay, I just did a couple of sections I wanted to glance at. Are there further questions about the bill? Anybody wish to?
Aye.
Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 2832 be recommended to pass. As amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. This is going quickly. I think people are just lying in wait for Senator Anderson. I know it's.
Yep.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes, I have one more bill, Mr. Chair, and that is Senate File 2941. It's the 4-H bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would be willing to, if someone would like to.
Excuse me, Senator Saltzman.
Yes, yes.
Senator Pappas moves adoption of the division report.
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. After we have worked on this bill, this is a bill that responds to the fact that in my county of Washington County, the county board last year after the unallotment by the governor made a decision that in order to make cuts in many different areas, they did cut the funding for 4-H. And in doing that, the local 4-H folks came together and worked to raise dollars so that they could pay for the extension worker that is required in order to access the 4-H program. So while we have, you know, extensive investments, the University of Minnesota does very good work within the extension area. Those programs are not accessible to youth unless the county 4-H, has an extension worker that they hire with local funds. So the local 4-H, youth and families work to raise dollars. Last fall, the county did provide a $30,000 appropriation to help with that, hiring of that staff, but have made it very clear they will not be continuing, the funding for this. So to help the local 4-H, because it's a program where once it leaves, it's going to be really hard to come back. What the local 4-H folks found was that they went to some of the cities and asked them if they would be willing to contribute, and several of the cities did, and yet they, determined that they are unable to then, make a contribution to 4-H work. And so Section 1 deals with that. Under Section 2, right now the university, prohibits participant fees being used to pay the costs of a 4-H extension worker. I would be willing to accept an amendment that would delete that. That is still a little controversial, and I think that the discussion about this bill has been concerned that this is a way for other communities to cut funding for 4-H, and that's not the intent of this bill. The intent is to help local 4-H units who may find in these very troubling budget times it's harder to fund this program to have other avenues to help them with their fundraising efforts.
Senator Evans.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, is it the fact that it would be authorizing the fees for the very first time, or is it being afraid that the fees will rival football fees in schools and things over $100?
Right.
Because we could. The other option would be to maybe say not to exceed, and $25 or pick a number.
Right. On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, I think that right now they can charge fees for different things. They cannot use those fees to pay for the staff. And so we did look at this as for providing a 4-H educator, so that it would be to make sure that you have the minimum staff in place so that you can access the program. I just know in other committees there have been some concerns. I'm trying to work with all the stakeholders, which are a very broad group of people because they care deeply about 4-H, but they are concerned that is this letting counties off the hook, and I appreciate that. Yet at the same time, I know that our counties are struggling because in our county it was, do we have a child welfare worker or do we have a 4-H educator? And those were the comparisons that we were hearing from our county commissioners.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, on that Section 2, do we have the authority to direct the university to establish a policy? I mean, isn't that kind of a part of the constitutional question in our relationship there, that it may be better not to open that can of worms of attempting to do so? Is that part of your if it is and you would rather have it removed, I would be happy to make that motion. As a former 4-H'er.
As a friendly, right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, Senator Olson, I think there's been a number of questions about this, and we have worked with 4-H extensively. We've had several meetings with the Extension Program, and I know they're watching Washington County very carefully because in these, again, these very trying economic times, these programs that many people don't feel are critical. And, the one thing that's been interesting about this bill, it's a very simple bill, but it's gotten a lot of attention, is that 4-H is also part of our agricultural society, that this is where our young people are exposed to many of these areas, although 4-H is more than cookies and cows now. It's been really, it's been a great experience to work on this because it's brought in a number of different people. It has to do with our state fair, our county fairs. If we don't have 4-H programs in place in the future, it's going to be a very different place in different parts of our state. So I think that's part of the issue with Section 2. But it has raised an issue of in the future and in perhaps a budget year of how are we funding these extension staff on the county level. But this would help us perhaps get through another year while we have that broader discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry,
and Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I see that in the division report, the language on line 10 changed from shall to is requested to.
Oh, okay. But Mr. Chairman, Olson. If it is the author's suggestion that we may best remove that section altogether,
yes,
that it would be helpful in actually advancing the cause that you're attempting to pursue.
Yes.
So I would still move to delete that then.
Please. please, that would be fine, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson.
Okay, so Senator Olson, could you repeat your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we on lines 1.9 to 1.12, we delete Section 2.
Okay. On Senator Olson's motion, is there further discussion?
Or as amended, whatever it was. But
if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I might, I understand that that in Senator Scogin's bill that is in this provision is in there, and I understand that on line 1.7 and 1.8, the words incur expenses and were I believe deleted. So if it would be possible to delete those as well.
I'd so move.
Okay. Senator Olson makes that motion. Further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
I would move the bill.
Senator Saltzman.
And I'm done, Mr. Chair, if you would like to move the I believe it goes to the floor at this point.
I would move the bill.
That's great. Senator Olson moves that Senate File 2941, or whatever's left of it, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator
Saltzman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I've done. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Scheid. And Senator Scheid, as you're walking up, I understand we're not going to hear Senate File 2170. And
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
If I might, I certainly intend to have that. I mean, to
yes.
request that bill to be heard at a later time.
Oh, yeah, we'll hear it next week sometime. And I'm also told, I'm not sure, was there a fiscal note for 1905?
No.
Mr. Mossman's. Well, I'll tell you what, let's wait for Mr. Mossman to. Oh, he's right there. Why don't we go ahead with 1761?
Okay.
And I think Senator Berglund moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, you may remember that we had a discussion of kind of parity for oral chemotherapy. We had the discussion on the floor. The bill made it, you know, was on the floor. And in the middle of that discussion, a question was raised about the cost to the state, particularly through CGIP. And Senator Betzold came over and said, you know, he would have to see the bill if that were indeed the case. And so I withdrew the bill, and we took it from general orders, took it back to Senator Betzold's division, and we amended the bill there to assure that there's not a cost to the state, to the CGIP plan. The purpose of the bill is to make sure that cancer patients that have been prescribed oral or pill form of chemotherapy can afford the out-of-pocket costs that come with that, especially as compared to people who receive chemotherapy intravenously. As I said, the amendment adopted in the division made sure there's no fiscal impact to the state, and I verified that with Ms. Morocco of the State Employee Group Insurance Plan. This amendment then, the amendment or the language of the bill now says that we limit the out-of-pocket costs paid by a patient under the pharmacy benefit, because that's where the oral chemotherapy benefit comes from. Would limit that copay or coinsurance to $50 per prescription. And you may or may not know, I didn't realize that the state employee program is that we have three levels of prescription copays, $10, I think, for generic, $16, and $36 for special drugs. So this falls, you know, those numbers already fall below that $50. The idea here, well, there are several aspects to it, and there's no question that oral chemotherapy drugs are expensive. So are intravenous chemotherapy drugs. It's very expensive treatment. and the oral chemotherapy is about 10 to 15% of represents about 10 to 15% of the treatment today for cancer. It's growing. It'll probably reach 25 or 30% of treatment. But what a wonderful option for people, as opposed to having intravenous chemotherapy. And what you may not think about, because you know these are very expensive drugs, and frankly, they're pretty comparable in terms of the intravenous, but some of the oral chemotherapy is more expensive. There's no question about that. What is not taken into consideration, I think, by the people who are opposed to this is the attendant costs, the associated costs that go with intravenous chemotherapy. And, you know, I thought I'd misspoken on the floor, and I was really embarrassed, and I went back and double-checked. One of the drugs that I'm getting, and I'll probably have this shot again next week, the charge is $7,985 for one shot, and that's for a side effect. That's to rebuild my white blood cells. And some of, over the years, you've heard of people undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, and you hear that their blood counts were low and they couldn't get their chemotherapy, and they had to wait till their white blood count built back, or even the red blood count. I had that go down on me twice during my first round of chemotherapy. Those numbers went down, and I ended up one time in the hospital getting a transfusion. That's considerable cost, and another time was able to schedule the transfusion and do it on an outpatient basis. Nevertheless, those are the kinds of costs that you're not seeing associated with the oral chemotherapy. But I have a shot that I will have 5 or 6 of in the course of these 6 months here or so, probably, that are almost $8,000 a shot. And it's because of the side effect of the intravenous chemotherapy. Costs more than the chemotherapy itself. Those are the kinds of things we can avoid, I think, and that, you know, I can't guarantee you that nobody would have any side effect from oral chemotherapy, but it's my understanding from the doctors, that there are not those associated costs. So frankly, I think at the end of the day, we save money. Two states have done this. They did it differently. They did it the way the original language of my bill was. And frankly, that caused problems because I was asking them to treat a pharmacy benefit the same as a medical treatment benefit, and that was complicated. This just sets a cap on the copay and means that people who have the ability to, whose cancer is determined by their doctor to be, would be effectively treated by oral chemo, that they have that option. It will save time, it'll save money, it'll certainly save a lot of side effects and the costs that go with that, to say nothing of the complications in your life. And for example, the shot I get can't be had. You generally don't give it the same day, so you have to come back in 24 hours for that shot. So if you live in Greater Minnesota, you may or may not have access to that. For example, I can't get that shot at my regular clinic. I have to go to where I get the chemotherapy for that. And I think it was on the floor that Senator Limmer talked about the kinds of costs and the issues that go with a family having to accompany another family member to the hospital for their chemotherapy, and the time it takes, the anxiety that's involved. And if a person can be home and take a pill every day, and then they and their family are so much better off. And just asking that you would, I know I probably shouldn't have to make the case on the policy, but I wanted people to know it's not a new mandate. These drugs are covered. They're already covered. It's just that they are covered under the pharmacy benefit, and that has a cap, and then people fall off the cliff and can't afford to continue on the drug. So they probably don't even start it in the first place. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I think Senator Betzold's committee took care of the fiscal issue. And
Senator Thomas,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, I have a constituent who, because she had insurance, was able to get the oral chemotherapy, and she's now cancer-free. And it was her opinion that had she not been able to get the oral therapy, that she would not be cancer-free right now, and that the oral therapy actually targeted the cancer better than the intravenous does, and that the whole situation of cancer treatment can be changed if people are able to access this oral chemotherapy. And based on the information that she gave me and the results of it, she was to the point where she was wheelchair ridden, and now she's cancer free, and it's all because of the chemotherapy or the oral chemotherapy. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to move this bill.
Senator Thomas moves that Senate File 1761 be recommended to pass. As amended. Further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And then, Senator Scheid, you've got Senate File 1905.
Mr. Chairman, I do. And this is a bill that I had introduced last year as well as this year. We didn't... I think we ended up not acting on it last year. It's in different form in the other body, and I think it's still in the form in which it was introduced, and that was we're asking for changing the small group market, the small employer health insurance benefit from up to 50 to be up to 75. Last year, I think we wanted to go to 100 employees, and the plans and the Department of Commerce have asked to look at this to see what kind of an impact we would have on other small businesses in the meantime. So this is a working group, and this language, I think, was developed by the department, and they're fine with it.
Senator Scheid, before we get to that, Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Sorry, Senator Scheid.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so this is something I wish that had been, you know, worked on before we even introduced the bill, probably, but it certainly is timely. And there's a strong interest in those, especially in those small businesses that are growing, and they hit 50 employees. And if they hit 51, they fall off the cliff in terms of the policies that they're able and the cost of the policies that they're able to purchase for the benefit of their employees. And so we want to get this moving, and it looks like the only way we can really do that is to get the group together to study how they might best implement this.
Okay. And Senator Scheid, there's not an appropriation attached to this. I don't think we've heard that there's an objection to passage as we have the division report in front of us. Is that
Mr. Chairman, that's right. Yeah.
Questions on the bill?
I'll move it.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 1905 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify.
As amended.
Sorry, as amended. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much.
Okay. I think I saw Senator Bonhoff somewhere here. Right there. Senate File 2750. Senator Betzel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What you have before you is a constitutional amendment proposal. What this bill does is it adds a constitutional question on the ballot that would put forward to the voters the question of being able to bond for technology. As we look at our challenges, particularly with regard to our structural deficit over the next few years and the structural deficit that we have been facing in our past and currently, I think we all know that we need to find some way to deliver government more efficiently, to lower the ultimate cost of delivering government services. Many of us have come to realize that one of the key ways to do that is to be able to leverage technology to become more efficient. Just as an example, the various counties each have their own technology system to keep their data. And I've had members who work for counties come to see me and say that they're still using a DOS program and that doesn't relate to anything the county next to them is doing. And so a lot of our lack of collaboration is not for a lack of political will, but we have barriers to being able to utilize technology to make that happen. Again, the same thing happens with regard to our school districts. Not all of them have the same opportunities as other school districts. And so I don't think we're ever going to be sitting on a pile of cash where we're going to be able to say, gee, we're going to use this money and revamp our, you know, technology systems. We're going to do the kinds of things we've always known we should, and we're going to take this money and do it. At the end of the day, there are so many pulls and tugs on that budget that this area gets left behind. So this bill says that when we go through the competitive process of bonding, that technology projects are projects that we look at, that we could say, let's use this bonding money for that rather than building something.
And Senator Bonhoeff, do you have any sense of what the utilization might be?
Senator
Cohn, in terms of bonding appropriations?
Mr. Chair, you're saying how many technology projects would come forward if we were to make this change?
Yeah, I realize you can't answer that in detail, but is there a sense as to what the usage would be?
Mr. Chair, we've had several meetings, for example, among the education committee people, even over the last summer, getting together saying, why couldn't we bond to do fiber optics all over the state so that we could have equal access to online learning, to online testing, to the computer adaptive testing? And so we've gotten opinions from council saying, could we do that? And we've gotten word back saying, not without a constitutional change. I know there have been projects that Representative Kahn for many years has been trying to get accomplished in terms of coordinating all the data under one system. So I've had strong support from the OET area of Minnesota. I suspect you'd see many projects come before the bonding committees that would increase what we're doing in technology.
Mr. Chairman? Okay.
And Sarah Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know, has any thought been given to the speed with which technology changes? To bond for it, is it going to be obsolete before the bonds get paid off? And is this, this seems to be, I think, one of the bigger challenges with going down this route, particularly with the breadth of aspects of the of your the wording.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's a very good question, and that has been one of the concerns raised along this process. So I've spoken to different bond counsel, and I've learned that in order to qualify for tax-exempt bonds, you cannot bond for something if it would be the life of it would be less than the time that you'd bond for. So actually, in law, we would not be able to do that. We would only be able to take advantage of this if we could build a case and a rationale for that it would live as long as the bonds were there. So, for example, that would preclude being able to bond for computers for every student. You wouldn't be able to do that because computers, by the time you'd get them out to the schools, they'd be obsolete. But laying fiber optic, I'm not in a position to say whether or not that would last us for 20 years, but somebody else would have to make that determination. And if it was determined that that wouldn't pass, then we wouldn't be able to bond for it.
And Senator Bonhoeff, this bill was in what, Senator Betzold's division? Was it ever referred to Senator Langseth's committee?
Mr. Chair, no, it went right from Senator Betzold's committee here. I've talked to Keith about it, but it did not go before his committee.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that we can bond for certain things if it's included in part of a project, such as, you know, if you have a new building and you want to include the infrastructure wiring for fiber optics or whatever, then that's considered bondable. There is kind of a fine line there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, what I have been told is that it depends on if it's permanent part of the building and that if you can defend its permanency. But in some cases, I think we'd like to be able to do, you know, overall system upgrades and types of things that aren't within a specific new building footprint.
Further questions? Comments? Senator Sengen.
And maybe counsel can help. I'm just reading lines 111 and 112 where it talks about to acquire and to better public land and buildings and other public improvements of a capital nature. And so when we get to the definition of capital, is high-level technology a capital expense, or is that an equipment expense, or is that defined in law?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sengen, this is part of the current law that we use to sell most of our bonds. And the difference between capital and non-capital, what can be bonded for and not, is the kind of thing that Senator Bonoff was explaining. She was essentially explaining the current law, as was Senator Stumpf. If it is an asset that is long-lived, 10 or 20 years, and particularly if it's part of the real estate, if it's a fixture, then you can bond for it already under that language that you referred to. But I think what Senator Bonoff is interested in doing is eliminating that requirement. So it doesn't have to be part of the building, and it doesn't necessarily have to be long-lived either in order to be able to bond for it.
Mr. Chair and Consul, as for instance, there's a room down here on the first or second floor on the west side full of hardware. Is that neither long-lived or capital equipment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sengen, that's correct.
Okay.
Senator Bonoff.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Senator Sengen, just to reiterate one piece of that, that still within the guidelines of this provision, you wouldn't be able to bond for something if the life of what you're bonding for would be less than the term that you were doing the bonds, that we're actually prohibited by law from doing that, so you couldn't make some irresponsible action in that way, because I don't think that would be a good use of Minnesota's dollars.
Sir Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, my own impression of this is that it may be a good idea, but when the voters get in the voting booth next November and look at this, it's going to be very hard to get to 60% if this thing passed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, I agree with you, and so I think there needs to be some work done on the language, and I would be doing that between now and the time it comes to the floor. I think what you see here is the essence of the change, and then what I'd like to do is to and I've spoken to counsel about that, is to continue working on language that would be more compelling so that we had a higher likelihood of getting that 60%. And I think you'd want to have some language that would point to the ability to save costs and improve efficiency for all government sectors.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't this have to go to rules before going to the floor?
Further questions or discussion? Okay. Anybody want to do anything?
Move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 2750 be recommended to pass. All those in favor?
Refer to the rules.
Mr. Chairman, there is a blank
Oh.
on page 2, line 10.
Yes, there is. Should that, Mr. Chair, should that say 2010?
Mm-hmm.
Can I incorporate that in my motion, or do I need to amend
it? Oh, we make that as an amendment. All right, Senator Anderson moves on line 210 to add 2010. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Then we have Senator Anderson's motion that Senate file 2750 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed.
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you.
I think I saw Senator Carlson.
And Sieben
here. Well, I think Senator Carlson was here first, but
Sieben was here first.
Mr. Chairman?
Question on Pardon? The yeah, there's Senator Carlson. Senate file 3084. Senator Bessel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate file 3084 was a bill that started out with from the library services, and I have Ms. Robbie LaFleur here to answer any questions. The what it does is it removes it changes the level of reporting from $50,000 per contract to $25,000, and this is to be able to view the performance reports on contracts that the state has with private contractors after they're complete. There was a fiscal note on it, and what happened is in the budget committee, they sent it forward without recommendation because of the fiscal note. And I have the A2 amendment, if somebody would like to move that.
I'll move the amendment.
If we could have it distributed.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, what the A2 amendment does is it makes some minor changes in the language from creating a database to making the report publicly available online, and changes the effectivity date from 2010 to 2011. And those two changes remove the fiscal note, so it won't have any fiscal impact. And I'll stand for any questions.
Well, first let's have the vote on the amendment. Senator Bessel moves adoption of the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I had a question.
Opposed. I'm sorry, Senator Higgins.
Sorry. I see you're taking out the language that says that the report has to be in a publicly available place online. Oh, no. I see you're just changing the language. I'm sorry.
Taking the database out.
Taking the database out and now just making a report. Right. Okay, now I'm ready. Thank you.
So, Senator Bessel moves adoption of the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Carlson, Mr. Mossman has just indicated that the agency is still claiming that there's. Mr. Mossman, can I ask?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment that you just adopted did a couple distinct things that changes, that definitely makes reduces the cost of the fiscal. Note that you had in your packets. One, the date you'll see changed, pushed the requirements out 1 year, which would change things by 1 year in the fiscal note. And also, there's no longer a database required. It's identifying the reports that are already being developed and making them available online. There is the agency may be here to testify. I don't know. It certainly has softened the cost. And I would also note that there is, at any rate, no appropriation in the bill. So at this point, there would be no budget impact in the bill in that regard. It may be that the agency would do some things other than this.
Would you like to offer some testimony?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Kaufman. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Administration. Senator Carlson was nice enough to propose some changes to us that changed the database requirement, which would have required us to create an entirely new system to manage this, and instead replace the information or the language with a public, making the information publicly available online, which allows us to use a tool that we're currently using. May require some modification and change to make sure it's incorporates more reports than it currently does, but we ultimately believe that's a cost we can incur.
Okay, thank you. Further questions for Senator Carlson or the witnesses?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sengen.
Maybe a naive question. Is there a public appetite for this? I mean, as we think about huge deficits and workloads and things that are important to do, is this important to do?
Yeah. Senator Carlson?
Hey, Mr. Chair and Senator Sengen, we believe there is. There's a lot of access that has been attempted on these reports. They're very simple. They're one-page reports, and they give the agencies that need to hire these contractors information on the background of the contractors and how they're performing. So I believe there is, and I believe, in fact, what it does is it averts hiring a contractor that may not be up to snuff. There's the attempt sometimes to do what they call barring, and if these reports are not available to the agencies, they might miss a contractor that ought to be barred or should be barred or has been barred. So I think the overall part of it is to have more transparency within government and also to the outside, too.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I don't see anything on the report that gives information on whether this is a women-owned business, a minority-owned business, what kind of contracting percentages have been done in that department for our underserved businesses. Another report, I assume, is the answer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that's correct. We currently make available, I believe, online a list of our targeted vendors. The Department of Administration maintains a full-time staff member who deals with getting minority, woman-owned, and now veteran businesses registered within the state. And assuring that in the contracts that go out, we meet the proper requirements to provide opportunity to those individuals. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion or questions?
I'll move the bill.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 3084, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Sieben is jumped up earlier. Okay, we have a couple bills. Senator Sieben.
It's your preference, Mr. Chair, whichever one you want to do first.
Senate File 2629 is the first on the agenda. Senator Betzel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 2629 deals with some money that is left over in the state's Help America Vote account. And I should also mention that at this point, I don't think the committee has moved it, but this language has passed Senator Betzold's division, and I believe
we just adopted it.
It's included.
Adopted the committee report.
Okay, great. So, just to give you background on the bill, in 2005, the legislature passed a bill to spend $35 million from the Federal Help America Vote Act to acquire assistive voting equipment and to purchase precinct-based vote counters in Minnesota. And out of that $35 million, nearly $33 million was allocated and sent out to the counties, and today there's about $2.5 million in federal money that was identified to help counties purchase equipment, but that $2.5 million remains in the state HAVA account. So that bill asks for that remaining money to be allocated.
And here with me today is Kevin Corbid, who's the Washington County Director of Property Records and Taxpayer Services, who has been working on this issue and is willing to explain the bill further.
And a former Senate employee, of course. So, Mr. Corbett, if there's anything you'd like to offer.
Mr. Chair and committee members, no, I just would thank Senator Sieben for bringing this forward. This bill has been worked out with the Secretary of State's office. They are supportive of the remaining HAVA account being spent for this purpose. And this will help the counties in two ways. One, it'll help counties who are out of maintenance and operation funds to help fund the assisted voting equipment and the precinct counters that were purchased in 2005. And the second way it'll help is those counties that purchased their vote counting equipment before there was federal and state money available and used just local property tax dollars, they will get some assistance in what is going to be a replacement purchase because the equipment is getting old and needs to get replaced now. So the counties that got help early on from the federal and state money back in 2005 have equipment that was purchased without any local money. This will help those counties that purchased with just local money prior to the federal and state money being available. I'd answer any questions that you might have.
So is there...
My county, your county.
So at some point, the assumption would be that the money would... there wouldn't be money left, so there might be counties who would find themselves, if they're too late making the application, they would not get the grant. Is that the assumption? Possibility?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's correct. What the bill says is that the grant applications are due by December of 2010, and if you are allocated funds, you need to purchase before 2014. So there could be some counties that are not going to purchase before 2014 that would choose not to apply. But I think many counties would be in that time frame to purchase that would be eligible for this money.
So is there a chance that, I assume what the Secretary of State is going to send out some kind of notice of the availability of funds. So I guess what I'm wondering is if all 87 counties apply, is there a chance that some counties with legitimate applications get left out? Do we have any further requests for an appropriation coming here for that purpose?
Mr. Chair and committee members, in the bill there's language that says that if a certain number of counties apply for grants for a number of precincts and it exceeds the amount that's available in the appropriation, that the grant amounts are prorated. So whatever we get in for grant applications, divided by the money that's available, that's how much money will get sent out per precinct to county. So the idea here is to spend the remaining federal money but not allocate or not try to spend any additional funds other than what's remaining.
And I think HAVA was, what, 6 years ago or 7 years ago originally?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the money actually was allocated in 2005. I can't remember, the federal law passed probably a year before that or 2 years before, 2002. Mr. Watson has helped me out there. So,
Is there any expectation that there's going to be any reauthorization for monies of this sort?
Mr. Chair, I know that we are aware that originally they did not allocate as much money as they promised in the 2002 federal bill. But from the county perspective, we are not expecting any more funds for equipment purchases. We expect this to be the last federal money that's available in the near term.
Of course, now this was in the aftermath of the 2000 presidential election, so I guess the assumption being we're not going to have problems like that again with some of the equipment. Although, hey, Mr. Corbett, I don't think you're in a position to answer, but what happens if we go back to the prior bill, Senator Bonham's bill, and there was some discussion about technology becoming obsolete. So when we find 10 years from now, 20 years from now, that the federal assistance in having up-to-date election equipment, now we find that equipment's becoming obsolete, outdated, breaking down. Are the counties and the states going to be in a position then to take care of everything? And again, that's kind of a rhetorical question, which would be difficult to answer, but, you know, a lot of us might not be around to worry about it, other than if we're going to vote. But I just wonder if at some point we set ourselves up down the road.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, that's a very legitimate concern that we share as county election officials. The 2002 HAVA bill did a couple major things. One, it transitioned many precincts to a precinct count, and so you've got about a $5,000 to $6,000 machine to actually count the ballots. But it also required a second piece of equipment to help with the individuals need assistance to cast their ballot in private, and that piece of equipment is called the AutoMark, and that's about another $5,000 to $6,000 piece of equipment. Both of these things operate both as a computer, but also a lot like a copy machine where the ballots are going through the equipment. And it's pretty clear that they're going to wear out in a 10 to 15-year cycle. So now you've got 4,000 precincts in Minnesota that have probably $10,000 worth of equipment in them that are going to need to be replaced on an ongoing basis. And we expect that there will not be any federal money to help us with that, and that the most likely pots of money is going to be local property tax dollars. And it's a significant concern about what the additional costs for counties will be, you know, as we move into 2015, 2016, that kind of range for that assistive voting equipment. I think a 10 to 12 year lifespan is about all we can expect.
So, Sarah Sieben, 10, 15 years from when you're chairman of this committee, you can figure out the answer to that.
I don't know about that, Mr. Chair, but Mr. Chair, we do, the A3 amendment was distributed, and this makes some changes, just some technical changes that were suggested by council. If someone would be willing to move that and incorporate
it's
into the
It's drafted as a delete everything amendment. Is that
correct?
Was that the intent then?
Mr. Chair, and it's my understanding that all it is are just technical changes relating to the language that is to say the same thing.
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I will move it, but I have a question on 2.22 and 2.23. The sentence says, if the county doesn't use the money it's received by June 30th of 2014, it has to return the unused money by June 30th of 2014. And I'm thinking there should maybe be a day in between there. Maybe it's by June 29th, and then you have to return it by the 30th or something like that.
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, however much time you want, I was just reaffirming that on Senator Higgins' suggestion that I assume the intent is to, would be to have it canceled within the fiscal year, so you would want to move the dates that direction so that they have to use it by a time before June 30th, 2014, and have it returned to the state by June 30, 2014, so that it could be reappropriated if desired.
So, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Chair, I will, if it's okay, I'll incorporate in my moving the A3 amendment. On line 2.22, change June 30th to June 15th.
Okay, that'll be incorporated. Senator Frederickson.
Chairman and Senator Higgins, you have the same issue on page 1, line 27.
Okay. And then also on line 1.27, change June 30th to June 15th.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Since June 15th is my birthday, does that mean I get the money?
No.
That's a separate amendment. Okay, Senator Higgins has incorporated those changes into her motion on the A3 amendment. On that amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm wondering about this equipment and how why it would be wearing out after only 10 years or 12 years. And I think of other equipment that gets used every day for almost every day of the year, and it lasts for quite a while. And here we're looking at equipment that only gets used two or three times a year. Why would it wear out in 10 or 12 years?
Mr. Conrad?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, our experience with the equipment is that it's not the computer parts that wear out. It's the pieces that act like a copy machine, you know, the kind of the moving the ballots within the machines that are going to cause difficulty. They do get used fairly infrequently, but when they do get used, there's a lot of pieces of paper going through them in a single day.
You might have precincts that have 3,000-4,000 voters in them. So we will certainly stretch this equipment as long as we can in our counties, but we also want to make sure we don't get caught where we have an election and equipment that's not working properly. That would be the worst-case scenario for any county election official or city election official. And so you need to make sure that your equipment, when it only is required to work a couple times a year, it better work those couple times a year as well.
Further questions?
I'll move the bill.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 2629 as amended be recommended to pass. There's no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Stephen, you.
Thank you.
Would you like to go on your name?
Mr. Chair, I also have Senate File 1590.
Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 1590 is also, well, as you just moved, is incorporated in Senator Tomasoni's bill. I'll talk about it just really briefly. Essentially what it does is establish regulation of inflatable amusement equipment facilities. So right now in Minnesota there are approximately 9 facilities that offer places for families to bring their children to jump in these large inflatable, commonly known as bouncy castles or inflatable slides. And this is an industry that has been growing across the country in the previous decade, and there's currently no regulation at all of this industry here in Minnesota. 25 other states regulate this industry in some way. So what the bill will do, and in Section 1, it has some definitions, and I'd point out that this does not include facilities, or it does not include facilities that rent out bouncy castles or inflatable equipment rides. It only applies to permanent facilities that families take their children to for entertainment. In subdivision 2, it just says that if you're going to have one of these facilities for commercial use, you need to comply with the legislation. Subdivision 3 requires inflatables to be placed in a manner that comply with ASTM standards. ASTM standards is the American Society for Testing and Manufacturing. They're standards that are used and referenced in other areas of state statute, for instance, the regulation of carnival rides. In Subdivision 4, it says that an inflatable has to be monitored by a supervisor in accordance with ASTM standards. This changed, this section changed from the way the bill was originally introduced. Originally, it said that for every device similar to an amusement ride, you had to have a trained operator. This now says that it has to be in accordance with ASTM standards, so the industry was more comfortable with this language. Subdivision 5 requires insurance. Subdivision 6 says that they need to register with the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. And Subdivision 7 says that the Commissioner of Labor and Industry has the authority to administer this section, the regulation of them. And then, Mr. Chair, there is one amendment that Mr. Watson suggested, which would say that the fee receipts that are paid from the registration would be deposited in the construction code fund. That's the A14 amendment. Do you want to move that now?
Okay, we can take action on the amendment. I have a couple of questions after that, but.
I'll move the amendment.
Okay, we have the A14 amendment in front of us. Senator Higgins moves to adopt the amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions. I believe in your packet there's also a article that was in an online publication that one of the Pump It Up is one of the major facilities here in the state. And this is just an article about how they testified in Senator Moy's committee on the bill and are supportive of these types of efforts to have more safety regulations on the industry.
And Senator Stephen, it looks like the division added a section, cadmium in children's jewelry.
Right. Mr. Chair, perhaps Senator Higgins would like to speak to that because it was her bill that was attached in Senator Tomasoni's committee. Mm-hmm. Would like to.
Mr. Chair, that's true. This is, if you remember, about 3 or 4 years ago, our state led the nation in regulating lead in children's jewelry and toys after the death of a young child who lived in Senator Berglund's district. And what we have found is that lead has now been replaced by cadmium in children's jewelry, and it is every bit as dangerous to the kids as lead. So this regulates cadmium in children's jewelry. It uses the same ASTM standard that regulates cadmium in children's toys at the federal level. And, Mr. Chair, I do need to make an amendment. You'll see it on lines 2.1 and 2.2, the effective date of the division report. I've been working with the manufacturers and the wholesalers and the retailers trying to figure out, because they order their product so early, when the effective date is. So if this is an appropriate time, I would move on 2.1 to change October 1st, 2010, to January 1st, 2011, and then on lines 2.2, change January to March.
Okay, we have Senator Higgins' motion. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. So, Senator Higgins, this just seemed to be a good place that was connected because it involved children and whatever it is, ATSM.
Mr. Chair, it involves the safety of children, and we both use the ASTM standards. And we both are now in Senator Tomasoni's bill as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Chair Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is there anything that you could make children's jewelry out of that would not be dangerous if they're chewing on it or swallowing it or whatever else? Maybe we should just be banning children's jewelry.
Or children. I mean,
or children.
That's how you look.
Would be bad
I'm not going to go that far, Senator Cohen. If you want
to. I wasn't suggesting it. I thought you were leading to that. So if you wanted the other.
Mr. Chair.
You can do that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, they aren't necessarily dangerous if the, like the cadmium is properly encapsulated and you'll see that there is a level of 75 parts per million that is allowed in here, but it has to be in a form that is not on the surface coating, and it has to be in a form that will not break down. So there. You know, I know the manufacturers probably are struggling with what to use next, but I think the safety of the kids has to be set in place here. And I will note that this is the standard that is in kids' toys now through the Consumer Product Safety Commission. It just adds jewelry to the same standard. And you might be interested in knowing that after Minnesota passed our lead regulation bill, whatever year that was, it has now been the standard that many other states have picked up and have put our same standard into place in their state. And we're expecting that this will happen with this bill as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, on line 33, and this is in the section that prohibits a retailer from selling a jewelry that contains cadmium, why are we exempting the sales or free distribution of jewelries by a nonprofit organization?
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, we did the same thing in the lead bill, and it's for organizations like Goodwill and some of those types of organizations that don't pay for the product, but it may be given to them, and we don't want to have them be afoul of the law. I would like to think that they probably wouldn't put it on the shelf, but it was a way to protect them in the same way that we did with the lead, right or wrong.
Senator Higgins, if it's bad for children, it would be bad no matter the source of,
yeah, it's true,
of the lead or cadmium.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sieben, is there, and I didn't, I wasn't on a committee that heard this legislation, but are there children or young adults that have been injured with these inflatables?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, this bill came to my attention, or this idea for legislation came to my attention from a woman in South St. Paul. A constituent of mine whose son attended a birthday party at a facility in Woodbury and had a traumatic brain injury as a result of being injured on the equipment. No one's quite sure what exactly happened because there is no supervision of the child, it turns out that there's sort of a network forming of families whose children have been injured on this type of equipment. There is another mother from Victoria who came to testify in two or three committees and talked about her son's injuries. Because there's no regulation right now in Minnesota, we don't have real firm numbers for the number of injuries that occur per year here in Minnesota. I was contacted by a woman who actually had a really severe leg and foot injury when she went into some equipment because her toddler was about to fall, and she got stuck in the equipment and then had a lot of bad things happen to her as a result of that. But on the federal level, the Consumer Product Safety Commission has said that approximately 25,000 children are injured a year on inflatable amusement equipment. That does not just include these permanent facilities. However, that also includes, families who rent them in their backyard and the kids bounce off of them and fall onto the ground. But, without getting into too many details, but we did see in committee, and I learned this from my constituent, for instance, Subdivision 3, which talks about how the equipment has to be placed in a manner that complies with ASTM standards. That's because in some cases these big bouncy things will be placed on concrete where there's just industrial-grade carpet over it. So when children fall off, they can be really severely injured if there isn't proper mats placed around them. So that was, that's an example of where we saw photos of where that has happened in some facilities where there wasn't proper equipment around the devices. There has been some criticism that this bill doesn't go far enough. It should also regulate the rental industry, also because when parents rent this equipment, they're not necessarily aware of the risks that are involved or the dangers that can occur if children use this equipment improperly. But that was just a little bit too much to.
Who, Mr. Chairman, who are we trying to zero in on? Is it like the McDonald's that have those big inflatables, or is it you buy at Walmart and you blow up and put in your backyard?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, neither of those examples would be a part of this regulation. There is language in the bill that says that, I can't remember exactly where it is now, but there's language that says that that it only applies to places that where the primary purpose is for the use of the commercial use of these inflatable equipment. So it would only apply to places like Pump It Up or Just Jump, where families take their children to go to bounce on these things. It wouldn't apply to McDonald's. It wouldn't apply to the Saints came in and in a previous committee. They said, you know, they have one of these bouncy devices at the ballpark right now. And so we added legislation that says that it would only apply to the places where families take their children to bounce.
So why wouldn't it apply to the Saints or other places?
Because they're not a primary. We're only trying to target this legislation to those facilities where families take the children to go to bounce because they're unregulated right now. I mean, I know that you could take your, and I do take my child to McDonald's sometimes to blow off some steam so he bounces on those things. But perhaps that needs to happen in the future, Mr. Chair and committee members, but that was more than we were willing to do at this time.
It just seems that it's a little bit of a distinction without a difference to the extent that.
Well, Mr. Chair,
is there a difference when you take them there that they pay to have them use the equipment?
Mr. Chair, the difference is that you're taking your child to a place where you're going to take them to bounce at these facilities.
And you pay to do it?
And you pay to do it, and you sign a waiver at the beginning, usually saying you understand there are inherent risks associated with the activity. But like I said, 25 other states regulate this new industry where, and maybe some of the, Mr. Chair, you're not familiar, but there are these places now in Minnesota that are have been in business the last decade where you just take your kid there to jump on the bouncy castles and slide down the inflatable slides. And that's what we're trying to get at with this legislation, not facilities beyond that. It doesn't apply to carnivals or to county fairs. And that's just because... That's because we're right now we're just trying to get at this newly expanding industry in Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I sit here thinking about this, I'm trying to remember what the Republican platform says about overregulation. And as I sit here looking at Senator Thomas Sonny.
Senator Dill, I got to interrupt you. Do you read the platform then?
Mr. Chair, it'll be his last act before he retires, I guess.
You don't have to ask him. I've
noted at various times when the Democrats have supported the Republican platform, I've thanked him for it. But as I sit here and looking at Senator Tomasoni over there, I'm wondering what's going through his mind, because I know how he feels about primary enforcement of seatbelts. And I, of course, support that, but I'm trying to figure out whether you would support a bill like this and not support primary enforcement of seatbelts. It doesn't seem to really add up. And I just feel kind of uncomfortable with this whole idea of extending more government regulation in a time of recession and
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni?
Chairman, Senator Dill, I don't know how you got there, but the state law, even without primary seatbelt enforcement that I oppose, does require that kids be belted in, and you can be stopped for that even when it was a secondary law. So this is all about safety for kids. I don't think Senator Seaman is trying to do anything onerous here. She's just trying to regulate some places where people go that aren't regulated right now. And she has a pretty broad bill in regards to the number of places that aren't regulated. And so I don't think this is over-regulation. I think this is just trying to make sure kids are safe when they go to the places where they actually use these pieces of equipment as their primary business.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Dill, I'm a little bit concerned in a different direction. I'm going to feel very badly now when I go to the state DFL convention 3 weeks and I don't read the platform. And I'll be thinking of you reading the platform and thinking maybe I should do it. But,
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Yeah, get off that platform and into another one. Are you suggesting that the companies that charge for having their children, families bring their children there, don't carry insurance now and aren't subject to a suit for negligence if they aren't taking care of this kind of thing on their own? It seems strange. It does seem a bit strange that, given the fact that there have even been some accidents, that they wouldn't know that we would somehow have to tell them what they have to do, because we're still not going to be preventing things from happening. We're just
telling
them you've got to have insurance, you've got to have some supervision, but that doesn't necessarily stop anything either.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I'm looking through my file because I have an example, and we talked about this extensively in Judiciary Committee, where parents, in order for their children to enter these facilities, need to sign a waiver of liability and assumption of risk. And the legislation would not say that you can no longer have these assumption of risks forms, similar to what parents sign when their children sign up for t-ball or hockey or whatever. But it does say, and this was, like I said, debated extensively in the Judiciary Committee, that if an operator is at fault, you cannot have a waiver that holds harmless the facility if they are liable for their injuries. And it's, as we talked about in Judiciary Committee, in some cases these waivers are not held up in court when a parent signs away their liability for their child, but this legislation will say that you can't force the parent or you can't tell the parent to sign away their liability if the owner is liable or is at fault. But and perhaps you're right that we can't, and I recognize that you can't regulate or put into place statute that would take away, that would exclude any possibility that children could get hurt at these facilities. But as you'll see from the article, which I distributed, which is the major franchisee of these facilities in Minnesota, this is a reasonable step to take to ensure that there is some regulation, that these facilities do carry insurance, because not all of them do have this level of insurance, so that if a child is injured, their medical costs could be paid for by that insurance. So, again, it's not that this bill is without controversy, but I do think that we have made concessions to the industry regarding the supervision and the ratio of supervisors per ride. Obviously, amusement rides in Minnesota are regulated, Senator Dill, and I keep that in mind, that when you go to a county fair, to the state fair, those amusement rides need to be checked for safety inspections periodically. They need to comply with ASTM standards. And there's nothing, if you've seen children use these, there's really no distinction between those rides and some of these. So this is kind of a beginning step and a moderate proposal, I think, for what we're trying to do to keep children safe. Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Sieben, I think the cost is covered by the fee. Is that correct?
Correct.
Which is what, the $100 fee? Is that Chairman Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering where we're at with the bill, if anyone has moved it. Did we already discuss, does it have a fiscal impact?
I just asked.
That covers the fee. So I just moved the bill then.
So Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 1590 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, I was just scanning through an email from a an owner back in Rochester that has one of these, Ed and Sue Hyatt, and it sounds like they have a pretty good one. They've got four supervisory staff on hand all the time with whistles. They have 16 cameras. They don't mind about the carpet or the padded flooring. They don't mind at all about the insurance. And she goes on and on here, but at the end of the day, she says that to comply with this regulation would cost us a minimum of $1,500 a day in employee wages to have one person stand by each unit all day, every day, all that so that a parent doesn't have to be responsible. Is that possible? It might cost this owner an additional $1,500 a day?
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum,
given all that they have, 16 cameras and four supervisors.
The bill that was introduced was amended, and so I think that your the concern was that each ride would need to be monitored, and now this says that, and again, this language was worked out with the industry, not with so Bounce in particular in Rochester, but the bill was amended to say that the supervision needs to comply with the ASTM standards, which are the industry standards that are developed with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. I'm not going to speak particularly to Rochester facility, but other, as you'll see the from the article that's in your packet, Pump It Up, which is, I think, has seven franchises here in Minnesota, was comfortable with that change after it was made.
So, Mr. Chairman, on that point, I see the language on the supervision. It's the ratio to inflatables must comply with that standard. Because no owner shall have an inflatable shall allow commercial use unless a trained supervisor is present in close proximity to the inflatable. What's the ratio in the standard? Is that one has to be by every inflatable, like as Senator Senjum's constituent has stated?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, it depends on the ride, and that's why we changed it, because some of them may not require one supervisor per ride. Some of the smaller rides, and some may require one. So that's why we're referencing the ASTM standards, because the ASTM standards are developed per the individual ride. So they take into account the size, if it's a 50-foot, well, I'm probably exaggerating. If it's a 20-foot tall slide, then it may require one operator for that ride. If it's a small thing where there could be two of them next to one another, then one supervisor could be supervising both of those. So it will depend on the individual ride. That's what the ASTM standards say.
Okay, further discussion on the bill. I think Senator Pappas has moved that Senate File 1590 as amended to be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Senator Anderson. Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
It was pointed out to me that in the last, in the delete all amendment, which we adopted on Senate file on the voting equipment 2629, there was language that was not included, which is an oversight on my part. So I'm wondering if we could fix that before.
Okay. Senator Betzel moves that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move reconsideration.
Senator Pappas moves Senate File 2629 be reconsidered. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So we've got Senate File 2629 in front of us again.
It was 1590.
No. Previous bill.
Oh, previous bill. Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
And Mr. Watson, are you comfortable explaining the change?
Okay, this is the HAVA bill, the assistive voting bill. So, Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, there are some good things in the first section of the bill that didn't make it into the second section of the bill. On page 1, lines 9 to 11, there's a sentence that says that if the grant requests exceed the appropriation available, the Secretary of State shall prorate the grant amounts to each eligible county to match the amount available. In the second program, there's not that prorating. and the counties had requested that the prorating language be added to the second program as well. So that would be on page 2, line 7, after the period, insert that same language. If the grant requests exceed the appropriation available, the Secretary of State shall prorate the grant amounts to each eligible county to match the amount available. Then there's one other thing. We talked about on page 2, lines 12 and 13, we talked about those dates for returning the money. And we talked about it on page 1, line 27, and then also on page 2, line 22. Well, there's the same kind of return language on lines 2.12 and 2.13, and that really doesn't need to be there at all. So that sentence can be deleted on 2.12 and 2.13. That's duplicate.
Chairman, I would move that amendment. Yeah.
Senator Ferguson moves the language as suggested by counsel. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Does somebody wish to move the bill again? Senator Betzel moves that Senate File 2629 as amended be recommended to pass. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Anderson, let's revert back, not from this morning, but from a couple of days ago, to Senate File 3275. You could just remind us where we left off. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 3275 is our omnibus non-general fund finance bill.
We remember that.
Okay,
certainly.
Good. And I don't want to go through the whole anything again. I just have a couple more amendments that I need to offer. And I do want to start by, all right, let me just say I'm going to, and I think I mentioned this before, I intend to take out the water fees that are in this bill, and that would be to delete Article 1, Sections 1 and 2. I don't have this in writing. Pretty simple. And let me just explain, if I may. As you'll recall, members, from the other day we were here, when was that, Wednesday? We do set up an 11-county metro area groundwater monitoring program and put $5 million of clean water fund money into it that was previously appropriated but not designated for a program. So it's from last year's appropriation. We also had proposed some fees, so there'd be a local contribution to that. I think we're going to wait on the fees. We're working on – it will cost more than the $5 million over time, so we'll have to work on this in next year or the year after to figure out how to pay for the remaining – cost of this monitoring program. We have a sustainability framework that's been very, very comprehensive, that's in progress, that we will bring to the legislature next year in January, that is being led by the University of Minnesota, the EQB, and others, with participation from all around the state. And that will come back to us with more information about what levels of groundwater usage are sustainable and what pricing structure would be appropriate. And so I think it's better just to wait until next year for that part of the bill, for that part of the program, to figure out how to pay and who should pay. And it'll just make this bill simpler this year and remove some controversy. So I would like to move to delete Article 1, Sections 1 and 2.
Sir Anderson, did you wish?
I just moved it.
Yeah. All right. So on,
one and two.
On the motion.
As far as I know, no one would oppose this motion.
Motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Section one. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I have another oral amendment, which is to take out another section of the bill that's quite controversial. I'm looking at Senator Olson because this was her language, and I do it reluctantly because this is something we've discussed year after year after year, and I brought it up on Wednesday. This is the Let me point you to the section, Article 4, Section 5, which is page 49. And this relates to the requirement that was put in place several years ago that requires lots of state agencies to sell off lots of land to help balance the budget. Our division and the policy committee have raised objections to this law year after year. I think what we need to do next year is to repeal the law once and for all and figure out how to pay for it equitably as part of our budget overall deficit issue. I don't think this is a good way to take care of our state's budget needs. There's been a lot of selling off of land and facilities, and we put in place a restriction that the DNR couldn't sell off outdoor recreation land to meet this requirement, and that remains in law. And so I'm hoping that what I'd like to do is delete this section because it will cost over $2 million, and we just can't. And this require the way it's drafted would basically require all the other agencies to take up that that cost. And obviously that's supported by my division, but probably not by anybody else outside of our division. And so it just may – I don't think we're going to be able to proceed with it as is because of the cost. But I think – I'm hopeful that not much will happen on this until next session and that we can try to – remove the obligation in the future because it's just not a good way to balance the budget. So, Mr. Chair, I would move to delete Section 5 in Article 4.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your explanation of that, Senator Anderson, because my original bill was to delete the provision because you know, as I uncovered what has been going on, that $6.4 million to balance the budget back in 2005 never occurred, and we've been extending it. They've been selling off land and substantial numbers, 500 and some acres of land have been sold off and 48 parcels and so on. But it has only brought that down. There's still a balance of about 2.3, I think it's whatever's on your list, 2.3 million. But if you repeal it, then we've got to face the reality that we've got to find some other way to do that because our forecast counts that as income, and of course we don't. If you're not able to sell the land, then the next forecast comes out and we didn't get that income, so that's a shortfall. But that's a game we've been playing. We've been dribbling along, but as the Department of Administration has testified and DNR as well. We've made every effort, but what I think was most troublesome to me is that the land that's yet available to be sold, I mean, the biggest holder of land is DNR, manager of lands, and so that's who the burden falls on to sell the rest of this land. But what we've done is that we've made it impossible for them to sell any land. We've said you can't, in this economic times, sell below appraised value. So anybody that might come in and offer, they had $8 million worth on a public sale in different parcels. No bids, no offers, because they're tied by our state law that requires that you can't just go and give away land. You've got to get appraised value. Well, then the next thing we did last year was that you can't sell any of the part of the outdoor recreation system. Well, that's everything. It's parks and trails and scientific natural areas and rest areas and all of the things that there's really nothing left. And this year, when the DNR came in trying to lay out, actually getting permission for waivers of bits of that to sell. Things that were on their public land sale, we wiped it all out. And so the other what I had amended this to instead of a repeal was to let DNR off where they had achieved at 2.216 million, and not have them, because if you look at the language on page 49, that on starting at 49 line 26. If the total of all money deposited into the general fund for the proceeds of this section is anticipated to be less than the 6.4 million, the governor must allocate the amount of the difference as reductions to general fund operating expenditures for other executive agencies for the biennium. Well, when I pursued with management and budget, who would love to be rid of this thing because it just we're just got our head in the sand and we're not facing reality. I said, would this come out of DNR's budget then? Well, they're the ones that have got the land, so they'd have to eat a $2.3 million loss to their budget in addition to the other cuts we place on them. So if we do nothing right now, that's what happens. So I, in one respect, I hate to see you take the pressure off by pulling it out, because it's saying if it isn't repealed, DNR is going to have to eat another $2.3 million. And I don't think that's right, because we've tied both hands and a leg behind their back, and we've given them almost less than a leg to stand on in trying to achieve something that is a bad policy. So, I mean, this is I'm not doing this for any campaign purposes or anything else. I'm trying to get – we need to get back on foot. Now, we've got till 2011, and then somebody's probably going to come back and say, well, we'll extend it to a couple more years. I'm not against selling land, and I'm not so sure that what we've done – in tying the hands is totally responsible, because I think DNR has been, all along the way, we've had land sales. When there's some properties that aren't as significant and important to the system, why not put them back on the tax rolls and use those resources for buying things, as we are doing now with our legacy funds? We are buying up land. We're created a new park. So, but there's why, if it's just going to be hoarding land and not being willing to sell, I'm not against the sales of these lands. It's the way that we have said you've got to sell this amount to solve a budget problem in the general fund, because most agencies, including some of DNR, there's restriction on where that money can go, and it does. They weren't bought with general fund, and they can't go. The funds can't go back into it. So I'd like to see the thing resolved, and that's why I have been mucking in this thing this year. Because DNR is spending energy. They get criticized by the auditor that they're not managing what they have adequately. Yet they're out having to try to be busy trying to sell land that they can't sell in order to keep from getting more money taken out of their department, making it impossible to do the job that they were intended to do. So it's a vicious circle that we ought to at some point bite the bullet. And it would be better if we did it now, but apparently we want to put it off.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we've already done our part of the budget. It's been signed into law by the governor. So, unfortunately, it's a little hard to manage it now. But I promise you that you and I should work. I'm going to work on this next year, and we should do it together. And we should try to get this done once and for all. I know Mr. Meyer from the DNR needs to speak to this.
Mr. Chair, just briefly to this point, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. We do appreciate the discussion on this important topic. We've been talking about it since 2005, that when this law was enacted, the burden will fall to the department. And Senator Olson's comments about changing the law about lands that the department can sell, the change that took effect last year prevented us from selling units of the Outdoor Recreation Act to meet this requirement of general fund debt service, basically, is what the provision does. However, the bill that we introduced in the beginning of this session provided several things that were taken out along the way in lieu of this provision that was there. Our original bill had a provision that would allow the department to sell land at below appraised value to meet these requirements. Currently, we have over $8 million worth of land that anyone could walk into the department and purchase today, of which those receipts would meet this requirement. We have two 40-acre parcels right outside the city of Hastings that are ready to be developed. They're in the middle of two housing developments. So we just can't sell that land at the price that we have right now. So our original bill allowed us to sell below appraised value to meet this requirement. We also had many different parcels of land, gravel pits, for example, that we've acquired from MnDOT that no longer meet the purposes of the Outdoor Recreation Act. Wildlife management areas that you can't hunt, for example, but the state is still reimbursing the local units of government for payment in lieu of taxes, that we wanted to dispose of to help meet this requirement. So some of our ideas that we're trying to develop tools for our toolbox to meet this requirement have been taken away. The other piece here, if you look at Section 6 and Section 7 on page 50, where we had two parcels of land that we could sell to help pay the obligation of the general fund debt, this bill now limits us to selling that for a dollar. So the one parcel is in the city of Wayzata that we've been working with. There's some controversy about the appraised value of that parcel, but there's also a piece in Clearwater County that we're working with the White Earth Band to sell. So not only now are we going to be continuing to be on the hook for the balance of this fund, we're removing $100,000 that we could put towards a general fund in this bill. We are more than willing, and we're doing all we can as an agency, as a member of the executive branch, to meet this land sale requirement, but we continually are placed with roadblocks put in front of us by the legislature to meet this requirement. So if this is taken out, I think we need to reevaluate at least these two provisions, and hopefully as the bill goes to conference and it comes back, look at the language we had introduced originally that would allow us to meet this goal within the time frame that's needed. Thank you.
We have Senator Anderson's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I have two more simple amendments to make, less complicated. One is I want to withdraw an amendment that we passed on Wednesday. And I don't know, do I need to move to reconsider that? Mm-hmm. That's the A7 amendment on utility crossing lines. And we were trying to find a cheaper way to solve the problem. It doesn't work. It costs more. So we just want to withdraw that. We're trying to figure out how to reduce these high fees that we added in last year's budget. We're going to keep working with the DNR on this. Again, this is Senator Scoy's bill that he brought to us to try to reduce those fees. We'll keep working on it, and as we move towards conference committee. So I'd like to withdraw the or move to reconsider the vote by whereby the A7 amendment was passed.
Well, we have the bill in front of us, so you can simply...
Sorry, correct. It's already in the bill. I'll just move to delete that section, which is the language of the A7 amendment.
Okay, I think the amendment's in the packet. It's section 5. I think you amended...
Right. We need to keep whatever is in the bill, what was originally in the bill, that language intact. We just want to take the new amendment language off.
Yeah. So we've got to reconsider. So Senator Anderson, we have the A7 amendment in the packet. So you would move to reconsider the amendment. So on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Now you simply.
I'd like to withdraw the amendment.
Okay. All right.
All right. And then, Mr. Chair, I have a technical amendment that the DNR has asked for. That's the A17 amendment. And maybe Mr. Mossman or Mr. Watson can explain this. This is something that's
affixed
to something that was in the budget bill.
A7.
It's just technical.
Got rid of that one.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, in the budget bill, there was a reduction in an appropriation, $335,000 to the DNR for some cost share work in southeast Minnesota related to the floods. The problem, technical problem, is that the way that money got there to be used by the DNR for the floods was by a transfer within that flood bill of some other general fund money that had been appropriated in another section. Section 8 was an appropriation to deed of, $35 million for the Minnesota Investment Fund for grants to businesses. Well, apparently there was money left over in the grants to businesses, so it was transferred over to DNR to be used for buyouts and other flood mitigation measures. So the money that's being reduced here, this 335, is really the money that came from that other source. So the amendment refers to the other source, the Section 8 money. And there apparently is plenty of money there to be canceled, but not just in the original appropriation that was in Section 5.
Okay. We've had the A17 amendment distributed. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the amendment. Is there further discussion on the part of the committee? Okay, if not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Mossman had recommended we also delete Section 21 on page 17. And this was the state parks money for kind of blowdowns and that sort of things to This would maintain that whatever revenue comes in from that into the general fund. The DNR had asked for this, but I guess it's recommended we take it out.
So so you're moving to delete section 21?
Yes. Section 21, correct. In Article 2.
Okay. On that motion, Senator Anderson, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I was aware of another amendment for Washington County. Is that going to be offered by? Oh, there you go. That's what Senator Dill's got.
So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Uncontroversial.
Okay, Senator Anderson, is there anything else you wish to offer?
I don't have
bill?
Any other amendments.
Okay. Does anybody further committee discussion or amendments on the bill?
Chairman.
Senator Dill.
Well, Senator Dill first. I've got one.
Okay, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A14 amendment.
Trying to find it.
In that.
We could have it distributed. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, the A14 so amendment deals with page number 80, the private sale of tax forfeited land bordering public water in Washington County. And as I understand it, there's some islands that we want to convey to the national, to the United States of America, United States National Park Service, Department of the Interior. And the language that in the amendment will allow that land to be conveyed without value or without exchange of money. It's on line 80.5, after the word sale, we will insert the words or convey for no consideration to the United States of America acting through the United States National Park Service Department of the Interior. And there's a few other words deleted and so forth to accomplish that task, and I believe Senator Anderson is aware of this amendment, and I think she's supporting it.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe that's the place we could get the $2.3 million for the general fund. The federal government's awash with all this money. What are we doing this for? I mean, DNR is protesting a couple of provisions that are in here that would have been in times past transferred for no consideration without a blink of an eye, and now whining that they can't get $100,000 for them in both the two provisions that he mentioned. What's wrong with extracting the money here instead?
Mr. Chair, could we have the DNR lands person, Kathy Lewis, speak to this?
Okay, Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members, Kathy Lewis, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Lands and Minerals. This property is tax forfeited land, so it's not property subject to the requirement under the $6.44 million. It's not land administered by the DNR, and the county is proposing to convey it to the United States, and the loss of revenue would be in a local taxing districts, not at the state level. And the county is in favor of it, as I understand from talking to their officials.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I was aware of this amendment, and I support it.
Okay. On Senator Dill's motion, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Betzel.
Chair, technical matter on page 39, starting on line 20, there's a report, and it's ultimately going to go to the committees. We usually try to say it goes to the chair and the ranking minority members so it doesn't go to all members of the committee. So I believe what we would do on page 39, line 21, shall report to, we'd insert the chairs and ranking minority members of the, and I'll defer to council to the proper word.
Everybody, yeah.
Okay, and Senator Betzold's motion, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I guess Mr. Knopf has pointed out we amended Senator Saltzman's bill earlier this morning, And that language is also in here. So we should amend this to complete parallel language, identical language. It's the A18 amendment would do that. The one about the landfill siting rules.
We'll just make it identical.
And I think this is, yeah, this looks technical. Yeah. This is just technical language changes.
Okay, we've got the A18 amendment in front of us, paralleling Senator Saltzman's bill. There's no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I don't have an amendment, but just a comment. There's a very serious infiltration problem in the 8-county area here. Over 25 cities or so are affected by this. This is where the seepage of the sanitary sewers are on the overflows, and the older systems are draining directly into the stormwater system and affecting our rivers and streams, the Minnesota River, the Mississippi River, all the way Red Wing, all the way south, and it's a very serious problem. I know it was not the recommendations of the Clean Water Council, but it's something we have to seriously look at. It fits right into this discussion. Not that you care too much, but the governor supports this initiative. The Met Council does, the League of Cities, and it's got to get done. And if it doesn't get done, it's going to cost literally $1 billion or so to go through these 20, 25 cities to correct it. And I guess I was in front of Senator Chaudhry's committee, and I didn't... They canceled the meeting, and I was not very happy about that. But it's an awareness thing at this point, and it's a very serious matter, and we have to conquer it, or the cost is going to just soar. So, and it's a clean water issue, and we have to look at it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, I agree with you. It is a really serious and expensive problem, and it's going to cost our cities and cost homeowners a lot of money, so we got to figure out what to do about it. I agree with you. We had a lot of discussion in Senator Chaudhry's committee about whether the Clean Water Legacy Fund is the right way to pay for it or not, and I think that's where things broke down. So we'll have to figure out where to go in the future, because you're right. It's
Chairman,
very,
I can't
problem.
Think of a better source of the money, and the people in the 8-county area, you know, voted to support this initiative too, and so... We got to get it done, and it's a proper use of. And I'm not raiding any funds today, of course.
Okay, thanks for that, Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't have anything else that I need to do on this bill, and I don't know if there's other issues that need to be brought up. There's some fiscal notes floating around, but Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can move the bill. I would move that Senate File 3275 is amended, be recommended to pass, and it does need to go to the Rules Committee, I believe.
That was his reason given.
All right, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, I was just going to ask about the user fee for cross-country ski passes, and I noticed it's going up pretty much $14 to $19, $39 to $54 for a three-year pass. When was the last time that was increased?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I don't think it's been, 4 years ago was the last time? What? 2004. And apparently was the last time it was increased, or was that when it was started?
It's increased.
The program. Increased. So it's been 6 years. This bill was brought to us by the Cross Country Ski Associations because they feel they don't have enough money to do the work that they want to do for trails and grooming. So we didn't hear any opposition to it, and we did hear a lot of support from different cross-country ski groups. So, yes, it is a real increase.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I just wonder who's going to enforce this law or laws that my experience in the skiing area is that very, very few people have the badges to pay that. And if you're not going to do anything, my suggestion is not to put it in there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Foley, I think it really varies from park to park or place to place how much it's used. And, for example, in St. Paul, I don't think they seek funding from that program. Is there anyone here who can talk about it? Because in some parts of the state, they do have trail programs, cross-country ski trail programs that do rely heavily on this funding source, and I think the use of the permits is much more established in those locations. So in some places, this is strongly enforced, and in some places, it's really not used very much. It's my understanding.
Well,
I think in greater Minnesota, it tends to be used more.
I just think that it isn't being enforced in the Hennepin and Anoka and those areas, and I don't think that there's any likelihood of any change in that without some direction from this.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Foley, I'm not sure that most of the metro parks, I don't believe, make use of these funds. So that's, if I'm wrong, correct me. Some of them do, and some of them don't, and I think that's probably why you don't see, they don't sell the passes in some of the parks, and so they don't enforce it because they're not really using it. The system. They're not required to.
They're only required when there's state money involved.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add.
Mr. Chair, members, just really quickly again, Bob Meyer. It is really enforced by the users. It's a self-supported system. The Nordic Ski Association is very strong on the grant and aid systems that are out there. They wholeheartedly endorse it and support it. We don't receive any enforcement dollars to enforce the pass, so to speak, but it is required within the state park system, so we do monitor it and enforce it that way through our staff, our natural resource officers. It's just like anything else that's out there. The horse trail pass, for example, things of that nature. It's a user-based volunteer enforcement mechanism that's out there.
Further discussion. Otherwise, Senator Anderson moves that Senate file 3275 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Rules Committee. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion
Thank you.
Carries.
Mr. Thanks, Chair, Anderson. That was it.
Senator Latz. Senator Latz, Senate file 3325. Senator Betzel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for hearing this bill. Senate file 3325 would give the chair of the Finance Committee and the House chair of the Ways and Means Committee the authority to request a local impact note when there's potential impact on local governments of any legislative proposal before the legislature. It may surprise you to know that the finance chairs can't do that, but they can't right now, and only the tax committee chair can in each body. So this would expand that authority a little bit. The fact that there is a small fiscal note on there, about $88,000, frankly, if there is some more requests for local impact notes that result from this legislation, it's a good thing because then we as a legislature can make some open-eyed decisions about whether proposed bills will cost local governments money to implement.
Senator Last, that's awfully a lot of money. I don't know if we can come up with it or not. Might have to take it out of Senator Tomasoni's budget.
$8,000.
Yep.
Do you have $8,000 in the bottom line? Yeah. Senator Betzel, do you want it out of your budget?
Well, when Senator Last talked to me about this, I said, I wonder how much it costs to prepare the fiscal note. You know, so, Madam Chair, I'll move the bill.
Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, for the record, Last. The League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties also support the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rourke. Okay, Senator Betzel moves that 3325 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator
Olsen is
Olsen?
Here.
Okay, Senator Olsen.
Later.
Madam Chair, members, we're here today on Senate File 2471, and I have Bert Black from the Secretary of State's office to testify. It's very simple, some language changes, and the effect to the budget is why we're here. The fiscal note shows about a $2,000 a year cost to the state, and Mr. Black can address that.
Mr. Black.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor for the Office of the Secretary of State. And this is a very short bill, two sections. The first section involves the elimination of the fee for business trusts, which are a kind of filing we get. We get, on average, last year we got 11 of them, raising about $1,250. In the average year, we get fewer than 20, raising about less than $1,800 per year. And the reason we're doing this is because if we wanted to keep collecting the fee, we're moving to a totally automated system, and we would have to spend a lot more than the revenue we're going to lose, than the revenue we take in, to program this into our system. So that's the reason for Section 1. Section 2 is similarly because of the programming. We haven't had a filing under 557.01 for 5 years, but we should probably keep it because it's a non-resident service of process. I will note we have several attorneys here on the committee and in the room, and you'll enjoy this. We're sometimes accused of being paid by the word. This is a case where the state is actually paid by the word. The current fee is 15 cents per folio. A folio is 100 words. Probably costs more to count the number of words to compute the fee than the fee is worth. We have a similar function that we do under Chapter 303 relating to foreign corporation long-arm service process. The fee for that is $50. It's been that for a long time. We proposed changing the fee from this archaic fee, which hasn't been changed in 105 years, to the $50. But we're not expecting to collect any money under this because we haven't had any of these filings since 2005. But by changing it to this other fee, we can use existing programming for the other similar fee. And so that's Madam Chair and members, that's why we're trying to do this, to avoid a lot of money spent on computer programming we don't really need.
Senator Higgins.
I'll move the bill.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Black, 105 years ago, what was the fee per folio?
It was 15 cents per 100 years, 100 words, excuse me.
Even 105 years ago.
105 years ago. And I can tell you that the rate of inflation has been, a dollar in 1905. I had to do this for another bill. A dollar in 1905 is $25.40 today. So what might have been a reasonable fee in 1905 is the couch change today.
Senator Betzel moves the division report. We forgot to do that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Any other questions? Then Senator Higgins renews her motion that Senate File 2471 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you. Then Senator Frederickson, unless Senator Erickson Ropes is here. Senator Frederickson. Senator Frederickson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I've asked Mr. Jeff Freeman from the Public Facilities Authority to join me. Madam Chair, members, I do have an A1 amendment. It's a word usage amendment. I don't know if you want me to
offer. Okay, why don't we distribute the A1 amendment? Senator Tomasoni, do you have
division reporting or
division report.
Oh, okay. Senator Tomasoni moves the division report for Senate File 2873. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then we have the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd move the A1 amendment.
And
It's entirely word usage.
Word usage, okay. All those in favor of 28-7, the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I haven't seen it. Are there a couple of suches that were in the bill that we have to get rid of? Oh, never mind. Okay. There was a such. I knew
found
it.
Found a such. Such up. Yep. Page 10, line 7. We got it.
Plus, it changing it is authorized to nay.
Okay.
Senator Frederickson, before you leave, you're going to have to authorize the successor to identify such is.
Two words.
Challenge.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson?
Oh, Madam Chair, I just said it's such a challenge.
Such a challenge. I think we better
don't
find
watch it, there will be such as all through. Instead of using a period and a capital letter, they will be all run together yes. with such.
Maybe we could just pass a law that would direct the reviser to correct all suches. Sam Frederickson.
Yes, Jim.
Ban suches.
Madam Chair and members.
All seriousness aside, Senator Frederickson.
Senate File 2873 does not spend any general fund money. And deals entirely with additional federal money that will be coming to the state. And Senate File 2873 makes some changes to our law to make sure we can utilize the some $60 million of federal money that will be coming to the state for the State Revolving Fund and also the Drinking Water Fund. In addition, the bill makes a couple changes to the administrative structure of the Public Facilities Authority. There's Section 1 and 16. It finishes a process we started a couple years ago on how the Public Facility Authority is organized. Section 2 of the bill deals with the Clean Water Revolving Fund, and the Clean Water Revolving Fund will be receiving $37.4 million of additional monies. Of that amount, about 5.35 will be for grants. An additional $7.5 million must be used for green infrastructure type projects. Up to 25% of the additional $37.4 million must be used for grants of no more than $1 million for green infrastructure funds. Sections 3 to 6 makes some small changes but fairly significant to the wastewater infrastructure fund among and that does not affect the federal money that's coming to the state. Section 11 and through 13 are for the Clean Drinking Water Fund. And again, that is $22.8 million of federal money that's coming to the state. And the changes in 11 to 13 would make certain that we can utilize those funds. And sections 14 and 15 deal with a local government credit enhancement program that the state has in place to assist local units of government in making it a little cheaper for them to borrow funds. That's been a popular program. There's a cap of $500 million on that program, and this bill would raise that cap to $1 billion. So, Madam Chair, I'm not sure how much detail you want us to go into on the program, but that's a brief overview of the bill.
Thank you very much. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I just have a question. Senator Frederickson, going back to Senator Metzen's comments about the inflow and infiltration issue, would any of these funds be eligible to be used for correcting that problem?
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Freeman to.
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson.
Please just introduce yourself for the tape.
My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm with the Public Facilities Authority. I'm not familiar with the specifics of Senator Metzen's bill, but in general, yes, correcting infiltration inflow problems would be an eligible cost for the Clean Water Revolving Fund for low interest loans through that fund.
Madam Chair,
Senator Eric Anderson,
I think Senator Metzen's bill was about infrastructure that was in part owned by cities, but also in some cases the pipes that went from someone's home to the street, and so it was for private owners, and that's the problem. The Environment Committee didn't feel that clean water legacy dollars should be used for that because it really isn't about protecting our natural waters. It's about leaking pipes, but would it be eligible for that purpose?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, thank you for reminding me that issue. Our funds are only available for publicly owned infrastructure, so that portion of the pipe from the individual homes is privately owned would not be eligible for these funds.
But, Madam Chair, that would help a lot with the obligations that the cities have. So we'll have to direct them in to that.
Okay. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Fredrickson, do we define green infrastructure anywhere? I'm thinking about, 20 years from now when our trendy phrase green has turned into
purple.
Madam Chair.
Some normal.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, a year ago when I was before this committee with a similar bill to make sure we could spend the ARRA fund, we did not have a very good definition of green infrastructure. It's my understanding that since last year there has been a definition developed, and it's quite broad. Maybe Mr. Freeman would like to add to those comments.
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the terminology comes from the federal law and through EPA, and they use a term, green infrastructure is sort of the short name, but it encompasses water and energy efficiency improvements, stormwater projects, and I guess the key point is the project has to be a project eligible under the Clean Water Revolving Fund requirements or the Drinking Water Revolving Fund. In other words, it has to be publicly owned infrastructure that is designed to improve water quality, address wastewater or stormwater or drinking water, and then once it's an eligible project, there may be aspects of it that use energy more efficiently or address stormwater through infiltration, and those are the kind of things that the federal law is seeking to encourage. EPA has developed guidance on and examples of projects that would fall into this category. The PCA has done Pollution Control Agency has done a good job of taking that 10 or 12-page EPA guidance and kind of boiling it down into a much shorter document that they have posted on their website so cities can see what kinds of things qualify.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Higgins, your city and several other cities would be eligible to utilize some of this program for stormwater retention, for water improvement, water quality improvement programs.
Okay.
There is a priority listing, which cities would be eligible. Madam Chair, if there are
any other questions?
No more questions. I'd move that Senate File 2873 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
So you heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. And Senator Erickson Ropes? Not sure where she is. Senator Tomasoni, then, do you want to take up your bill?
All right.
Senator Tomasoni, you want to move the division report?
I'll move the division report, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni moves the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 2510 is the Omnibus Policy and Economic Development Housing Budget Division Bill, and as is consistent with the other omnibus bills that were here today, this is a result of policy bills that had some kind of fiscal impact that needed to be referred to the committee, and the authors of the bills were basically amenable to putting them into an omnibus bill as opposed to carrying them singularly. The Article 1, Section 1 and 20 of Article 1 refers to the at-risk business report and the fast action response team report from Senator Saltzman. And a fiscal note was completed on that, and there was no cost was determined on the fiscal note. Sections 2, 3, and 4 are Minnesota Investment Fund and Construction Mitigation language changes. Section 5 is a veterans-owned small business loan program and its permissive language. Neither of the sections 2, 3, or 4, or 5 required a fiscal note. On Section 6, that's a permissive assessment increase to the dislocated workers' fee. We've been hearing that the fund has been underfunded and that the 0.12 assessment that is in law was not generating enough money to fund the fund completely. So we allowed the commissioner to, with permissive language, to increase that fee to 0.14. And that would generate $3.9 million for the Workforce Development Fund. That's completely up to the commissioner, though, and it's not required. Section 7 of Article 1 did not require a fiscal note, and it was Senator Cohen's film production cost reimbursement modification bill. Sections 8 through 17 were Senator Saltzman's bill on the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority Act. And basically what we did was we took a $200,000 appropriation that was in deed that hadn't been used yet and used that appropriation to fund the new authority. So there was no cost to the general fund there. It was a wash. And then on Section 21 of Article 1, there was a comparative study of the state regulation affecting small business startups, and that cost the general fund $65,000. Article 2, we had a completed fiscal note, and it's an unemployment insurance administrative and benefit and tax modifications bill. The fiscal note was completed. It's a federal fiscal note, so there's a $12.3 million federal cost. Article 3 was a labor standards, licensing, and fees section of the bill. The Sieben bill that you heard today about the inflatable amusement equipment standards has a $31,000 cost to it. And then the construction code and licensing modifications bill was a combination. That's in sections 2 through 71. That's a combination of several different changes in the licensings of the construction code. And in some instances, the fees were increased, and in some instances, the fees were decreased. It was done in such a way that there was no cost to the general fund. Then on Article 4 on the Commerce Division, there was a mortgage origination and individual fees licensing renewal bill from Senator Scheid, which is in Sections 1 through 6 and 53 through 55, and there's a savings to the general fund of $50,000 there. Senator Vanderveer had an appraisal management and company licensing regulation fees bill that was another savings of $27,000. And then Article 4 also had Sections 27 to 30 was a portable electronics insurance regulation bill that cost the general fund $4,000. And then Article 5 you've seen a couple of times already, and I'll have amendment to fix that up. And those are the projects of on the Iron Range and the Minerals Division. And overall, Madam Chair and committee members, the bill actually saves the general fund $8,000. So if I might, Madam Chair, I think I have a couple of technical amendments that were handed to me today. And, one is an A9 amendment, which I think I should maybe have counsel explain. I think it's pretty basic, but I'll have counsel explain it. A9, I don't know who wants to do it. A9.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairman, the A9 amendment just provides the upfront money for the Department of Commerce to do those projects, and then we get the revenue back to the general fund.
Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves the A9 amendment. Is there any questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
And, Madam Chair, there's an A10 amendment also. council explain this one to.
Madam Chairman, that just defines that the receipts collected can be deposited in the state treasury and given to the code construction fund, so it's not an impact on the general fund.
Okay, any questions on the, we'll wait till it's passed out.
That's on the bouncy bounce. Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. That's right. This same amendment was made when Senator Stephen presented her her bill on inflatable equipment.
Could you repeat that again, Ms. Fontaine?
I'm sorry. This was the same amendment that was made when Senator Stephen presented her okay. bill on the inflatable equipment. It just does the same thing. All we right. have a couple bills that are in both. Okay. They're going separately as well.
All right. Any questions on the A-10 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, I have an A-6 amendment. And this one does several things. Maybe I can start describing it as you pass it out. One is it just changes in at the top of the amendment. It just changes an effective date on one of the unemployment accounts. And then line 1.6 fixes a reference on the new benefits account and then makes an effective date that's applicable to the federal unemployment compensation extensions that are in law. And so it just makes it work for the way the feds are set up right now. There's a deletion of a couple of sections in the bill, and what we're deleting are some sections that have already been signed into law by the governor. And section 1 and 2 and section 1 and 2 will be coming out. Section 3 is going to be amended to make it work better so that the distributions of the projects that were in the bill can be put into a special account and that the effective date will be retroactive to when it was enacted. And the reason we made those two changes was because we were advised by the agency that it works better this way. The revisor's instruction just codifies what was done up there, and then the repealer actually repeals this same language that was in the finance bill because it was signed into law in the jobs bill also. So it's mostly technical. I think it's all technical in nature as far as this bill goes, other than the effective dates and the account. So I'd move the A-6 amendment, Madam Chair.
Any questions about the A-6 amendment? Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Senator Tomasoni. And I know I've seen this language before, but Senator Higgins and I were just curious. On 4.8 and 4.9, what's the rehabilitate historic wall infrastructure around an athletic complex?
You don't have to concern yourself with that. It's already signed into law.
I know, but I'm wondering, what is it?
What
we don't
is.
Get it. What How do you
mean?
Have...
Madam
just describe
Senator
it.
Madam
just
Chair,
well,
Madam Chair and project. Senator Fischbach, Chisholm once upon a time had a real lot of rocks. They were glacial deposits,
once
and they were all
time.
Over the place. And in the WPA days, in order to put people to work, they broke up the rocks and they made this wall that's over a mile long. It's 10 feet high and it's 4 feet wide. And the wall is kind of falling apart right now. It was put up in like 1933 or 1934, and they have raised about half of the money locally, and this is basically a match to the local money to have finish the job so that the wall doesn't fall down. We call it our Great Wall.
And Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, it's around the athletic complex?
It's all the way around it. Yeah, it's almost a mile long.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, thank you for that little bit of history.
Well,
in
one,
fact,
Chair,
if you, next
Senator,
time
ever
Senator, wait, 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 Senator Anderson, go through the chair, please.
Madam Chair, I did say that, sorry.
But I didn't recognize you.
Comment, you didn't have to do that. Yeah.
I hadn't recognized you yet, though. Senator Fischbach had the floor.
Oh. Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, if Canada ever invades you, I think you can use that as a fort, too, it sounds like.
No, Madam
it's
Chair.
There's just no respect for the chair.
Madam Chair, there was a
Senator
time.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, there was a time, but They've knocked down a couple of spots where they actually could drive the tanks through, so we might have a problem. But the armory is up inside the wall, so we would have our own tanks that we could fight back with if that were to happen.
Senator Tomasoni, I had noticed this before in the jobs bill, this distribution of money that you raise from taconite tax. Is that what it is, the special fund?
Yep.
Now, does the IRRB then determine the distribution, or does your committee determine the distribution, or how is that determined?
Madam Chair, the reason we did this in statute is because this is not money that goes through the IRRB, so the board and the commissioner don't have jurisdiction over this money. And so the projects that you see that are listed here are all projects that have been determined by the local units of government as being necessary to do, and so we got a list of projects from the local units of government and then put them into the bill.
The reason I'm asking is St. Paul has a half-cent sales tax that is supposed to be for economic development projects and community development projects in the city of St. Paul, and we turned over that authority to an advisory committee in the city council. And in this case, how does this work? I'm just curious that maybe you have a better approach.
We call our local units of government and say which projects are ready to go.
And who is we?
And they give us a list.
Is this the Iron Rain delegation?
Yes.
Yes. And so then the delegation makes the recommendations to your committee and
the delegation makes the list of projects, as you see here, are projects that the local units of government told us were ready to go, and they have on the drawing board, basically speaking, and need some funding for. And so then we put them into the bill.
I'm totally not criticizing this. I'm just trying to understand the approach. So then the local units of government recommend to your committee and to you as the chair. Does the delegation weigh in or just goes to you as the chair?
Like any other pot of money, it's finite. So the delegation itself has to figure out exactly how much money we can spend, and then the local units of government give us a priority list, the 1,
right.
2, 3, 4, 5, and we try and fit in as many as we can. So, and that's kind of how it works.
So, Senator Anderson, this is an approach that we could try.
I'm sure the city of St. Paul wouldn't have
that. Our Iron Range colleagues.
You know, Madam Chair, I've been encouraging the farmers to form an IRRB of farming, you know, a penny a bushel or something like that, and then they would have their this type of thing in rural Minnesota too. But
any other frivolous discussion on the 8th Amendment?
Are there any such in here?
We're repealing something that was signed into law a week ago.
Yes, I want to point out that this particular provision was in. This is the third bill that it was in, so it got signed into law twice, and so we repealed the first one that got signed. And we kept
and then it
the
got signed
one.
Law again.
So we don't need this third one.
Very efficient government. Senator Betzel.
Senator Tomasoni, sometimes you outsmart yourself.
I don't know. I think this one worked pretty good.
All in favor of the A6 amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails. We're getting giggly because it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Not quite. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, the cadmium provision is in this bill as well. So if I could direct your attention to page 129, mm-hmm. I need to change the effective dates again, lines 3 and 4. So on line 3, change October 2010 to January 1st, 2011. And then on line 4, change January to March.
March 1st?
Yeah.
Everyone have the amendment? Do I need to repeat it? Page 129, 3, delete October and insert October 1st, 2010, insert January 1st, 2011. And on 129.4, delete January and insert March. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I need to make one more deletion. On
such?
Page 88, line 9, I need to delete a repealer. This is the alternative healthcare practitioner. Section that is, and I need to delete section the line that says on line 88.9, I need to delete sections 176.35, comma, subdivision 1B.
Do you want to delete that, though? Okay. Senator Tomasoni, okay, let's do this, and then we also have the film board language in here that's already become law.
Okay.
Does that need to be deleted, too, then?
That's fine. If it
we could delete it. Okay, let's take this first. Tell me your motion again.
Okay, it's on line 88.9. We need to delete the words section 176.135, subdivision 1B.
She leaves section in there.
Mm-hmm. So we do not want to repeal that.
Do not want to repeal that.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And where's the film board?
Not sure where the film board stuff is.
The film board bill, Senator Cohen's bill, is on section 7 on page 5.
So we can delete the entire section? Section 7.
Has that been signed into law?
It has been. It's been signed into law.
They both said they don't know.
I thought Mr. Mossman said it has been. Well, why don't we keep it then?
Keep
we can
it
always
just,
delete
it
on the floor.
We got it here.
Oh, okay. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I have a question. I know I've noticed there's a bunch of different repealers in here. I wonder if council could just go through those. I saw on page 20, and then there's a bunch on page 88, and maybe some other ones. I don't see anything at the end, any listed repealed language.
The original bill.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, on page 20, section 23, that repealer is from Senator Saltzman's bill. This is creating that new science and technology authority. And this repeals a section that will now be taken care of in the new chapter that we're creating, the authority. So it's just deleting the office within deed, or it's not necessary anymore now that we're creating this new science and technology authority.
That reminds me, Senator Tomasoni and I had this discussion earlier that this we didn't realize that 3014 would have such a broad impact on the University of Minnesota. So we're going to request to hear that bill in our division, hopefully on Tuesday, so that Senator Tomasoni then can go ahead and take up the bill on the floor. And maybe, I don't know if we'll make any changes.
I think,
or
Madam
not.
Chair, you can. I think the bill is in the finance
it's
committee.
It's in the finance
yeah,
committee,
okay.
So we don't have to take your whole omnibus bill,
right.
We'll just take Senator Saltzman's bill and have a hearing on that.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I had asked Council to go through the repealers. Could we finish that?
Yes.
I think that, Madam Chair, I think the next section of repealers, and correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Anderson, is on page 88, section 71. And the first paragraph A, all of these repealers came from Senate file 2510. That's the vehicle bill. That's Senator Sparks. Sorry, unfortunately, Madam Chair, with this bill, we don't have all of the repealers attached, and so then you can't see them. But these are all came with his bill, and that's sort of the construction codes, the Department of Labor and Industry. The first one, do you want me to go through each one? Because I
no.
Certain, okay.
Just
the
general.
They're building officials, inspection fee schedule, and we're redoing some new fee schedules. Removing a restricted plumber license, alternative state bonding and insurance regulation. 885 is another license renewal. So it's all licenses in Department of Labor and Industry. And then in paragraph B, we already deleted the alternative health care provider. But the other two, the 327C, are from 2712, which is Senator Saxhog's bill on manufactured home building code requirements. And they're making some changes to whether or not you get a sort of permission to put down a
a manufactured home that's been resold. So these are some provisions that, again, Dolly, Department of Labor Industry needed to repeal to do those changes. And then the paragraph C and D are also relating to Senator Sparks' bill, the vehicle, the 2510. And so these are more license fees and some rules on licenses and fees that were being changed.
Madam Chair, maybe I should point out to the committee also that I don't believe that we have anything in the bill now that's controversial.
So that's not what
I don't think we have anything in the bill that's controversial.
That's controversial. Mm-hmm. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A7 amendment, but it's not controversial either.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Are there more?
Okay. Why don't we pass out the A7 amendment? And while that's being passed out, we did determine that this on page 5, section 7, that the film production jobs program has been signed into law. So we can delete that section. Somebody want to move that?
I'll move it, Madam.
Senator Tomasoni moves to delete section 7 on page 5. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Roebling.
Oh, Madam Chair, I can quickly address Senator Anderson's issue. On page 129, section 55, this is an education and testing requirement that's being deleted. I think this is to do with Department of Commerce insurance, some licensing. They're no longer going to be certifying classes that were taken, and I think this has something to do with that.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The A7 amendment is actually a bill that is passed as a standalone on the House floor, and we're trying to match it up with a bill that for the House. So we think this might be one of the vehicles that it could travel in. What it has to do with is right now whenever somebody wants to offer cable service, they need to get a franchise from their local unit of government. And currently it's not real clear in law if the local unit of government could give a franchise to an entity that does not have to build out the whole system. And this would say that since telephone companies now have the ability to offer cable service, which they didn't used to have when laws were first written on franchising, that they would be able to just to permit them to have a franchise in the area where they currently have telephone service. And it's a clarification of existing law. And it, like I said, it is passed as a standalone bill on the Senate floor, and it's yes. as an amendment to something else. And I understand it's Senator Dibble's bill, and I am offering it for him, I guess, with Senator Tomasoni's permission.
So it has already passed the Commerce Committee, or did it go through Senator Solon's committee?
Energy and Utility
to the committee.
And state and local government.
Okay.
It's been through our whole process, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, my understanding is this is not controversial either, so I don't have any problem with putting it into the bills.
And Madam Chair, it doesn't have any cost associated with it.
Okay. Any more discussion or questions about the A7th Amendment? Then all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, I have the A11 amendment.
The A11 amendment.
Hers was A7.
Okay, Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, I did speak with Senator Tomasoni about the amendment, and what has happened is there's a cleanup issue in my district where they're trying to clean up some oil gas spills, and there was an issue about using the petrol fund money to actually purchase some land because it was the only way, or purchase actually, I believe it was land and a home. And so there was some, I guess, a little bit of confusion because we had a couple of meetings about if they could purchase the property or not with those dollars. And so this seems to be non-controversial. and just allowing them with approval by the board to purchase property if they need to, if that's the only thing they can absolutely do to get this cleanup done. And then if the property is sold later, then the money goes back into the fund. So I think this will just help move along that cleanup, and it should be non-controversial.
Senator Tomasoni?
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach spoke to me about this. I told her she could have this as long as she votes for the bill. And
and Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I know you've been wanting all year for me to vote for one of your bills.
And we also had the discussion that if we find out that this becomes controversial, that she's willing to remove it from the bill also. So I have no problem with it.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the ACE 11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Good way to fix it.
Senator Anderson.
I'm chair of the A8 amendment.
Look at that. I just have to chair. I make jokes.
Madam Chair, this is something.
Senator Anderson.
This is some language that Senator Dibble had in a bill that is. I know it's gone through all the committee process, and I think he's just trying to put it in a safe place so that it can move forward in an omnibus bill. And so I don't believe it's controversial at all.
Madam Chair,
Senator Thomas.
Senator Dibble spoke to me about this, and I know that they've hashed this out, and they have gotten this to the point where the whatever is defined in section 116.9401 is the right word for the use of green chemistry. So I think this one's okay, too.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor of the A8, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
I have nothing further, Madam Chair. I don't know if anybody else does.
Any other amendments?
Gone.
Yours is gone.
No, the pile is gone.
And I see. Oh, yeah, that someone maybe has a secret amendment.
Madam Chair.
Who said Madam Chair?
Me.
Oh, sorry. Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, do you want a roll call so that I'm on record voting for your bill?
No, this yell really loud. Nice.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill then. As amended.
Okay, Senator Tomasoni.
I'll move the Senate File 2510 as amended. You recommended the pass. And does this go to the floor?
Okay. You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Tomasoni is done. Senator Betzel.
Oh, we got your vote.
Oh, we did get it.
Okay. Senator Betzel, I noticed on the original bill, 3134, you have by request.
Madam Chair, there's a couple of explanations that have to be made here. The original bill was the governor's budget proposal, and I introduced the bill actually after we had already completed our work on the state government budget article for the budget bill. So I introduced it by request, plus there are other things in the bill that I didn't necessarily go along with. As we were approaching the third deadline for omnibus bills, the House had indicated, the House wanted to put all their omnibus things into the budget bill, which I resisted. But the House then said they were not going to have an omnibus budget bill. So I had to capture the only bill that I had that had my name on it, and that was this particular bill, and I said, we're going to build a omnibus bill not knowing whether the House is going to do anything or not. So we took all the bills that had already moved out of our budget division, and I put them in this particular bill. 2 days ago, the House has now decided that they're going to have an omnibus budget bill, and so that's why we're going to proceed. Some of the provisions that we had forwarded to this committee have already been adopted into law. So I think procedurally what I'll do is, and I'll check with Mr. Watts with this, move to first adopt the budget division report, then the A3 amendment, and then the A4 amendment. Okay? It'll make sense in a minute. Do we have the A3 amendment? We don't. Okay, so. Okay. Well, let me, rather than adopt the budget division report, Mr. Chair, we had an A3 amendment that, had we adopted the report, would have made your bill look with a lot of X's and a lot of a mess. So what we have is an A4 amendment, which basically would put the bill in the shape it would have looked with the budget, the committee, the division report, plus deleting the provisions that had to be deleted because the things are already adopted in the budget bill that was signed into law last week, and some cleanup language. So it's basically a committee engrossment.
So, Senator Betzler, are you asking, we're having to distribute the A4 amendment, the delete right. everything amendment, so you want to work from that document?
It's a cleaner way to do it because it deletes all the matters that had to be taken out because provisions that were in the committee report, division report, have already been adopted in the law. And there's some cleanup language in here. So, but since it's a delete all, let me go through it and walk through it and explain what is in the A4 amendment. The A section 1 is a provision from Senator Rest dealing with it's from request by the legislative auditor because there was no provision in the Outdoor Heritage Fund to provide fund for the legislative auditor to do the audits as they're supposed to be doing with all the major funds and all the major agencies. So this basically allows some of the money to be used from the Heritage Fund to pay for the legislative auditor to do the audits of the funds. And that's a normal provision. It just wasn't provided for in the original Heritage Act proposal. Section 2 is a bill by Senator Kevin Dahl that expands information in the fiscal notes that we get that would add information citing the increase or decrease of jobs in the state, the annual wages, and any estimate of federal money and the requirements in fiscal notes. As I say, this is not part of the fiscal notes we receive already. As you know, during the session, particularly with the bonding bill, a lot of questions were raised upon that. So Senator Dahl proposed this bill that would add that information to the fiscal notes. Section 3 is a bill by Senator Roebling dealing with deposits of agencies, and it's actually an old law that they have to make deposits if they're $250 every day. Well, the trouble is you've got some remote areas of the state that receive money, like from the DNR, and they have to drive many miles to make a deposit every day if it's totals $250. This just raises the threshold of that. Another bill is Section 4 is a bill by Senator Roebling dealing with a disposal of buildings that are less than $50,000. These are basically shacks that it's more trouble to demolish them than it's really worth it. However, they would have to advise the chairs of the Senate Finance Committee, the House Ways and Means and Committee, if they intend to dispose of these particular buildings. Section 5 is a bill that I carried that would require it's information for the state websites that we have, and we learned this last summer with the use of this federal stimulus money that there's better ways to design websites to basically better track how public dollars are spent. And if you go through all the state websites, there's thousands of them from each agency, it's very difficult to track them because there's different standards that are being used in it. We would like to have the Office of Enterprise Technology work with the agencies to have basic standards for all the agencies so that there's some consistency when you're trying to find particular information and make it much more transparent. That's in Section 5 and Section 6. Section 7 was a provision from the governor's bill that it just basically clarifies how the combined charities board money's fees are to be credited. Section 8 is also from the governor's bill. It's just a technical matter dealing with the Workers' Compensation Reassurance Fund instead of the Commissioner of Management and Budget, it's Commissioner of Administration. Section 9 was the bill from Senator Olsen that we heard earlier in this committee on the Secretary of State filing fees, as is Section 10. That was also, and that was the 15 cents for the portfolio filings. That's in this bill as well. Section 11 deals also with the transparency issues I talked about a minute ago for the Office of Enterprise Technology dealing with websites. This is just a report that comes to the chairs and ranking minority of the committees of the committees having legislative jurisdiction over the Office of Enterprise Technology. Section now 12, 13, and 14 was Senator Sieben's bill that we heard earlier. However, that was amended by the A3 amendment to Section Senate File 2629. So if you could go through your stack of papers define that A3 amendment, we probably need to adopt Senator Sieben's A3 amendment to that. So that, Mr. Chair, is the bill. If you look at the fiscal note, there's really not a lot of costs in here because the money is actually the biggest number actually is that are the HAVA funds, and that's already paid for, so there's really no cost there. I think the only real cost in this bill, the significance, is my provision for the Office of Enterprise Technology, where we're requiring them basically to absorb the cost of working with the agencies. Now, Office of Enterprise Technology does charge various agencies across the state close to $1 million a year already to work with the agencies to provide technical expertise. I should note that the Office of Enterprise Technology also provided a worker to the governor's office without an interagency agreement. I think that the office probably, you know, should consider whether or not they can just charge this to the agencies and work that out. But they came up with their part of the fiscal note. There's a small fiscal cost from Senator Kevin Dahl's expansion of the information on the fiscal notes. But otherwise, I think most of the areas of the fiscal note pay for themselves. So, Mr. Chair, that is a walk through the bill. If I could, I would like to ask that we adopt the A3 amendment from Senator Sieben's bill, 2629, so we have the language in this bill that tracks with what we already adopted in her bill.
Okay, so you're asking that before we adopt the A4 amendment,
I'll incorporate Senator Sieben's language of her A3 amendment in here and delete the provisions we have so we have her language in here. So I'd like to incorporate that as part of the A4 amendment.
Do we have the A3 amendment?
The A3 amendment was already handed out.
That's
in Senator Sieben's bill. It's 2629. And she changed the optical scanning equipment, and we made some changes in that. But the language that I've got in this bill was reflected her earlier language. The A3 amendment to 2629 is the current language that she wanted to have, and we've already adopted that.
Does everybody remember that discussion with Senator Sieben?
Yeah, vaguely.
Mr. Watson.
Just to refresh your memory, if you'll turn to page 9 of the bill, of the amendment here, the A4, where we're talking about the grant procedure for these grants. At the top of the page, lines 9.1 and 9.3, you've got that sentence about if the grant requests exceed the appropriation available, then the Secretary of State shall prorate the grant amounts. If you just copy that same sentence down on the bottom of the page, 9.32 after the period, insert that same sentence. Just to copy it.
Oh, that's the only difference?
Well, there was also those date changes on line 9.19. Change the June 30th to June 15th. And then on page 10, the sentence on lines 5 and 6, we deleted that sentence because it was a duplicate of the language down on lines 14 and 15. And on line 15, delete June 30th and insert June 15th. And then before the period, insert by June 30th, 2014. But then you'll have the changes that were made.
Mr. Chair, if those modifications make it track, then we don't need the A3. You know, I'll just incorporate Mr. Watson's changes in here. But I just want to make sure we've got the same language we adopted earlier in this bill.
All right. So Senator Betzel is incorporating the language as proposed by counsel into the A4 amendment. We then have the delete everything A4 amendment in front of us. Senator Betzold's motion, Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's the first section we have to appropriates money from the Outdoor Heritage Funds, and that needs to go to my division. It can either be deleted or we need to send this bill to my division. And I should point out that Senator Rest's bill that this is from is in my division and is scheduled for a hearing, but we haven't heard it yet. We just received it. So this needs to be heard by my division before we proceed, or I could just take it out now.
Does it also need to be heard by Senator Tomasoni's
Correct.
Division?
I would think. It appropriates money from the Arts and Cultural Fund as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can just leave the bill. I mean, there's a couple of ways. Senator Rust's bill is moving independently. So we could take it out of this particular bill. I just rolled it in here because these were all the bills. So I could take that out here and just Senator Rust can just have her bill move. I don't know where it's tracking in the other body, but
Or where it's tracking the other body.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But it's moving independently as its own bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and that's why we're hearing it in our division. It's already scheduled for next week. We just received the bill about a week ago, so we scheduled it as soon as we could. And I think that would be my preference, just to delete this right now, and then Senator Tomasoni would have a chance to look at it as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Pappas?
Just so that we're aware, then, if that's an independent bill in a division, then it'll have to come back before finance again.
That's correct.
If that's the path, and then we're not sure where it is in the other body. This is the money so they can audit the funds.
Yeah. Right. I have a hunch that once I get a sense of what the other body's doing with their omnibus bill, I don't want Senator Russ to lose this issue. I mean, if we can work this out so that the other budget divisions have a chance to see that, Senator Russ can offer it as a floor amendment if need be. But we can have a Senate position.
Yeah. Mr. Right. Chair, I agree with that, except she might want to amend it onto my omnibus bill. So she could put it on either one of our omnibus bills.
But I don't mind taking Section 1 out so that let Senator Rest work with the other budget divisions and then bring the issue back before this committee. So I'll move to delete. I'll incorporate deleting Section 1 from this bill.
Okay, then we've got the A4 amendment with the incorporations by Senator Betzold. Is there further discussion on the delete everything A4 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Betzold.
I don't have anything further. I don't know if anybody else wants to be heard on the issues. As they say, there are some fiscal impacts here, which I think I've identified, mainly to the Office of Enterprise Technology. That's the major one of this fiscal.
And I think, Senator Betzold, it's your position that that can be handled within the budget.
The Office of Enterprise Technology has working arrangements with all these agencies, and they bill the agencies for their work. I don't see why that can't be built in as part of the work that they do for all the agencies. It's not just giving them the responsibility. They're working with the agencies to make these websites happen. The big issue that was in here was that they would have the webmaster that was taken out of the bill. That would have been a cost to to OET, but that's out of this bill now.
All right, so we have Senate File 3134 as amended in front of us. Senator Betzold moves, moves adoption of Senate File 3134 as amended. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you, Senator Betzold. Members, Senator Erickson-Ropes apparently is not here this morning. So that's the last bill on the agenda. We've got a committee meeting at 1:30 on Monday. There's a commission meeting that morning, so we're going to meet at 1:30 Monday, 8:30 on Wednesday. Monday is Health and Human Service Day. Wednesday is Transportation Day. And then we have scheduled Friday next week for several hours.
You said 8:30 on Wednesday?
Yeah.
1:30 Monday, 8:30 Wednesday, when is the other?
And then Friday, 8:30. We don't have an agenda yet for subsequent meetings. So I think we have scheduled right now Friday the 16th, Monday the 19th, Wednesday the 21st. And we'll see how we're doing with our bills.
A lot of activity for no money.
Monday at 1:30, Wednesday at 8:30, and Friday.
So if there's nothing further, money's there.